Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first Survivor Update podcast. This is the podcast where I break down everything from the Survivor episode in detail, thing by thing, all the stuff. I update you on every bit of it because I am the robot that overanalyzes everything. And so that's my pitch for this podcast, is that we're going to go in depth. We're going to go through the episode and pick out the little parts that maybe you missed and then analyze them to death. And then also talk about, you know, what that means for the show and for the players. And so I'm here, your host, Taryn Armstrong, host of many Big Brother podcasts, including the Big Brother live feed update, which this is loosely inspired by. This is the Big Brother live feed update for Survivor. And so I am here with a great Big Brother live feed updater, Mary. How you doing, Mary?
I'm doing great. I'm Mary Krakowski, host of Absolutely Zero Survivor podcasts. But I'm here and I'm ready to talk. I'm repping my double Robs here. Got the Boston Rob hat, and then I feel bad, so I put on a plaid shirt for Rob Cesternino.
You're missing the Rob with two B's.
Oh, well, I'm also standing on a skateboard. You can't see it right now, but
cool.
We're there.
You're also like hitting people, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just down here.
Was like too aggressive,
kicking clay with my feet. So it's all good.
All right. Yeah.
I'm excited to talk some Survivor. Haven't done this for a little while.
Yes. And in particular, so Rob sort of had this idea for me. I give him the credit. And also, if this is bad, blame him to kind of do a live feed update for Survivor. I have seen the secret scenes. I have gone through the episode with a fine tooth comb, and I'm ready to present you all of the things that I thought you should know. And so that's what I'm going to do. But also in particular about Winners at War, for me is obviously monumental. It's monumental for, I think, a lot of the fans, but in particular for me, who is somebody that really cares about the strategy and really wants to dig into what works, what doesn't, which players are best, which are worst. I love those kinds of conversations. And one of the most exciting things for me with an all winner season is that this is by far the most accurate method of determining who actually might be the best player of all time. I mean, what better information are we ever going to get than actually seeing these players go head to head? I know it's not perfect.
Yeah,
it's far from perfect, but it's better than trying to compare two different winners from different seasons. And they didn't even play on the same season or this with the same format, with the same players or against each other at all. So for me, this is going to be the most, at the very least, the most informative thing when it comes to trying to determine how good these players actually are.
I semi agree with you on that. I mean, I'm excited to talk strategy. I'm turning my Ravenclaw brain on for this, but I do think that there is some amount of, you're never going to get all the winners to play together in a vacuum where they don't know each other's games. So you kind of have that. I would say that there's like an asterisk on, if someone gets voted out first, they could still be the best. You know, you can Tina being voted out first in All Stars, I don't think was like a great representation of herself as a player against those same people necessarily, because the reason she was voted out was because she was winner. So to some extent, I would say this may be the best we're going to get, but it's not perfect analyzing. That being said, I was really amazed with some of the gameplay we were able to get, considering that people knew what other people's games were going to be going in.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, factoring in pre-existing relationships and targets that are on somebody's back to begin with, all of that stuff is important, including like why somebody left. But I do think that there are some moments, even in these first two sort of episodes, even though it was technically maybe one episode, I'm not exactly sure. There were some moments where I felt like we got sort of two players in similar situations. One of those that I do want to talk about later is that I felt like Tyson and Kim were both put in very similar situations, and I was kind of surprised at the results of how they both responded to that being put in that situation. So that's sort of like some of the interesting things that that I think we can get from a season like this, and we can do our best. Obviously, especially as with Survivor, it's hard to judge these players and rate these players based on strategic gameplay. to begin with, but then also we don't have live feeds for this show. So we're just seeing an edit and we kind of just have to go off of that. So a lot of this is meaningless anyway, but it's meaningless things that I enjoy, and maybe you enjoy them if you're going to listen to this podcast. I don't know.
And you know, I was afraid from the start of this that we weren't going to be able to get this kind of gameplay given the twists and the Edge of Extinction and all of that, but it's already starting off to be such an interesting show. This is the most tense I have ever felt watching an episode of Survivor. I think there's a very different vibe to this season already, even when you compare it to something like Heroes versus Villains, just because of the pace of the game seems insanely faster, and there's so many factors outside of the game that, while those other seasons probably did factor in outside relationships and pregame alliances, this one they were talking about it on screen, and so we kind of see that thought even more so. And it was so nerve-wracking. I was like, man, is this how it feels to root for a sports team and to watch a game? Because I feel like I've had four coffees, and
I feel like it has to be way worse.
Yeah, this is terrible. And, you know, I don't know. I don't drink coffee, except for this morning when I did, which was a really bad decision. So a little hyped up now, too. But yeah, I mean, I felt like I was about to go run a marathon or something, just sitting there trying to watch it and getting I've never felt nervous before watching an episode of TV.
Yes, that's what I tweeted out. I was like, I feel nervous about, I've been looking forward to the premiere for so long. And then the day of, I was like, never mind. We can wait longer. I'm not ready. I'm too nervous about this. And so I was very nervous. And watching the entire episode, I was just nervous the whole time that, like, I felt like I was as nervous as the winners themselves at being, like, the first person out. I was like, I'm right with you because I'm nervous that, like, 90% of you will be the first one out. And I was, like, rooting for, like, I usually don't care at all in the immunity challenges, but in this one, I was like, oh my God. And I was like rooting for one tribe over the other. And then as soon as that one won, I was like, no, what have I done? Now those people are vulnerable. Why did I do that? Why did I make this happen?
Doesn't help that I was in like four different drafts and trying to keep track of where all my players were. So that's never good. And I think this is the first season I actually have money on. That's
bad. Luckily, I've forgotten about all of the drafts that I did because they were so long ago. So I have no idea who I'm supposed to root for. And I'm just going to root for the people I like.
Yeah. Well, and I like so many of them. There were really very few people, and, you know, we could get to it. But especially in that second tribal council, I didn't know who I wanted to go home. I didn't really want anyone to go home.
Yeah. All right. So let's go through the episodes here. We're going to recap them like it's a live feed up. Like I'm telling you what's going on here. So sometimes we're going to speed through. Sometimes we're going to stop and talk about some of the interesting things. But the intro, we come in. It's the premiere. There's lots of explosions. They're small explosions, though. It's like, boom. Boom. Jeff lets us know that there was no Xbox the last time that Amber won the game or played the game. I don't know if there was one when she won the game. I'm not sure when Xbox came out.
Couldn't tell you. But some of the references were a little bit, you know, like, oh, there were no iPods. There were no phones.
He's talking about like Apple products, which is like super perfectly mainstream. But then he mentions Xbox. And I was just like, where did. Does Jeff Probst play Xbox? What's happening here?
Maybe. I should probably figure that out. He can probably play against me in something.
We're introduced to fire tokens, which is a new thing in the game. You can basically spend them on various food items and also game advantages. It kind of feels like the Survivor auction, but just all throughout the game a little bit.
Yeah, which, you know, if there's any element of Survivor auction, I'm okay with that. I like the idea of people getting to the point in the game where they need to pool their tokens to maybe buy a tarp or something like that. That would be kind of cool. I did notice the tarp was one of the more expensive things on that list of stuff they could buy. I think this is mostly going to play into the Edge of Extinction and advantages and possibly, you know, getting off the Edge of Extinction, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how much if it helps level the playing field, I'll be okay with it. If it becomes extremely game breaky, we'll see.
Yeah. So far, really I feel mostly fine with it. There's a great reality, a Korean reality show called The Genius, which uses a currency in that game that can be used to great effect. So I think that the idea behind it is not bad. And from what I've seen so far, it didn't take up so much, like, much screen time. They, like, would mention it, and like there'd be the obligatory, like, these are important. In fact, Nick is going to say later, in my opinion, these will become very important. Really, in your opinion, Nick, right?
I think mostly, which this is not a hot take, but mostly they just required the players to say the word bequeath a few too many times.
Yeah. So basically, when you're voted out, you have to bequeath the fire tokens. I don't know why. I mean, Jeff Probst was like, you have to give it to some or bequeath it. Does it, like, he forgot to use bequeath, or maybe that's when he came up with it and then forced everybody else to use it from that point forward. Because he's like, you know what? That's actually a great idea. Let's use bequeath.
He said, you have to give these away. And then someone in his ear was going, Jeff, we wrote the word bequeath. You need to use the word bequeath. I'm sorry. Bequeath, if you will.
It just, bequeath is one of those words, like, moist. To me, like,
it just, it's not great.
Just saying it out loud, it's just too close to a lot of other things, I think.
And it just it doesn't flow, and no one actually uses this word, so I think this is Survivor trying to get a little fancy for no reason.
Yeah, sort of like Jeff's accent as he does the cheer.
What was with that? That really threw me off, and I think everyone, there was a lot of nervous laughter, like, was this intentional?
That's one of those things that's like, it's really shocking to me because Survivor has an editing process. Mm-hmm. Like, Jeff had to not only did Jeff have to go, this is a good idea, and then do it and go, like, nailed that one. But then also a bunch of other people had to watch it, cut it, put it into the episode and give it the approval to be like, no, Jeff, that was great. You nailed it. We're keeping this. I don't know.
It's not for me. I mean, like, it was fine. Weird. It was. And here's the thing. People were asking me, like, you watch real, you know, weird reality TV and other shows all the time. Why is this surprising you? It's because I'm not used to it coming from Jeff. Like, this might be the kind of thing you would expect, like, Tyson to do and then Jeff to comment on. Be like, huh, that was weird. But
it was too like, Tyson is like dry humor. This was, what did he say? He was like, a drink before war is everything you need. And I was like,
okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay,
I don't remember him doing this in, you know, Survivor China when they had like a war theme as well. It was none of that, but it's okay.
Well, let's be glad he didn't try any accents for Survivor China.
No, certainly not.
Yeah. We're also going to be introduced to Extinction, the Edge of Extinction once again. This is something that I want to keep track of throughout the entire season is the court case of Jeff v. the winners. Who actually wanted Extinction on the season? Because
I think they were tricked into believing that they only brought it back because the winners demanded it.
Yes.
Which has since maybe not been true.
Jeff continues to reiterate as often as possible. And hey, they wanted it. They told me that they wouldn't come back without Extinction. Meanwhile,
well, maybe they means just Boston Rob.
Right? Meanwhile, like, 90, close to like 80 to 90% of the winners are like, no, hate this. Don't want it. And apparently they were even polled in one of the tribals, and 7 out of 10 players said, no, we don't want this. And Jeff was like, what do you guys mean?
Now, I didn't catch it, but it didn't look in the editing, at least, like they even had the same sort of left or right option of if they could go to Edge of Extinction or not. It seemed like by defect they had to. And so I was just by default, they had to. So I was just wondering if maybe they, you know, they could have boycotted it. They all could have just chosen not to go.
I don't know. I feel like presenting them with the option to not go to Extinction is kind of an insult to a winner.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the whole Edge of Extinction thing, while I didn't love it in its original season, I both understand why it's here, but also am annoyed just because I feel like we didn't need this. We have an amazing cast. Like, let's just play Survivor and see, and not put an asterisk on anyone's game for coming back.
I'm pretty with you too, and I have heard some argument that, like, well, at least with Extinction for this season, we don't have to lose our winners. And I sort of agreed with that concept before I watched the first Edge of Extinction season, because in that season, Aubrey, I love Aubrey. And when Aubrey was voted out, I was like, oh, thank God I get more Aubrey. She stays on Extinction. That's the one good thing about Extinction. The problem for me, though, is that all of the content from Extinction is just really boring. I'm glad that Natalie got to stay, right? Because she goes to Extinction, but then the content we get from her on Extinction is just like a scavenger hunt, and there's very little personality that we get from. It's not like I'm seeing Natalie. Anybody could be in that spot. They would be doing the same things. And so I feel like I'm not even getting as much of that person as I should be. It's like a watered down version of the winner. And I was just like, well, we can just be without them at this point, I think.
Well, and this might be even a new idea, but if your problem is that you want to see more of these people, I'm okay with some sort of post vote, you know, whether it be a more extended kind of Ponderosa, you know, give us Ponderosa live feeds, give us Edge of Extinction where they can affect the game by doing things like sending advantages back in, whatever, but maybe get rid of the part where they could come back into the game. Like, that's the part where I'm hung up on, because even if in this season, if it's true, a lot of people have been speculating that, well, the winners aren't going to want to vote for someone who comes back from Extinction, which may or may not be true. We don't know yet. We'll have to see. I think for me, it's a little bit more like, I just want to see these people play and not have to think about, like, even like boot order. It's hard for me. Like, I cross people off when they get voted off, and they might come back in. They might change things. I just want a cleaner version. And it's like Game of Thrones, you know, part of the good part of Game of Thrones was that anybody theoretically could die and you might lose your big characters, which is what puts the stakes in a show like Survivor. We're going to lose the people we like, and that might happen, and that's okay. And we have to be okay with it. And then we could go watch them in this other place just to still get their personalities, but they're not going to win the game anymore. And that's what I like.
Here's an idea. Put them in the Rob and Sandra booth.
Sure.
Have them watch at least the tribals and give commentary. Right?
Yeah.
That might be fun.
What about the challenges?
That was my favorite part of Island of the Idols, is getting to watch Rob and Sandra's reaction to tribal.
Yeah, and I mean, it might be silly in that season where they're not really part of the show, really, but like, for these people, for these winners, they have more of a connection with the people still left in the game. So that would be even more interesting to watch. It'd be a lot of people. You'd have to make that booth bigger.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even like in the jury phase, I feel like if there was another scene at the end of the episode where we got to see the jury discussing how they thought tribal went, like, that could be fun. I don't know. Sure. I feel like there's just not enough actual jury content in general, because they're too worried about like spoiling the outcome of the vote. But like, that tension exists for like 5 minutes in the show, or like maybe 15 minutes in the show, because, you know, anyway, we also get $2 million. $2 million. And that means that Survivor is now outspending Big Brother this year by a factor of six times more money this year in Survivor over the course of two seasons than Big Brother's won.
They make up for it by Instagram fame.
True. Very true. Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe these survivors will start getting their hair care products and whatnot.
Maybe. We have the first immunity challenge. It's the heroes versus villains sort of like a physical thing, but in the water. And the red team is going to dominate this one. I call them red team and blue team because, do you guys even know the tribe names? I certainly don't. Now, I know one is like Sealy or Sele or something.
Something like Sele and Dekal.
Yeah.
I was thrown off by these tribes. These were not, for me, it's like really weird watching Boston Rob being on a blue tribe, which just seems wrong. And just some other people, like anyone who I'm used to seeing them in a particular color, it just seemed kind of weird. It seemed kind of off. Kim being red just seems weird. I don't know.
Strange.
Doesn't fit for me. I don't like color change, you know, and I don't like that they are using the same heroes versus villains color scheme. but not sorting them into like hero, like just choose to. There's so many colors out there. You know, there's more than just red and blue and purple and orange. Could have done like yellow and green.
That's blasphemy.
Gosh, I know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know why we need the blue and red. Maybe, I mean, is there a bigger than 100% chance they will have a black merge buff probably at this point?
I would imagine.
Yeah. Mostly, I just need more color buffs to collect.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's all about me.
Yeah, it's all about you. Anyway, the first immunity challenge. I did read the Dalton Ross wrote an article about like what you didn't see because he was there. And apparently the sort of swell of the ocean, the tide, the movement of the, I'm not an oceanologist or however those people call themselves, but yeah, the movement of the water really pushed toward the red team's pole, which really helped them out. And you know, that's just kind of the luck of the draw that they tried to make, put it in the most neutral place, but then the wind picked up in a certain way and that's just how it went. To which I would say, why not just have them go to like alternate poles?
Because they already made them those colors.
Far be it for me to be like, oh, well, the colors, we can't mess with the colors. Okay, well, that's fine. But anyway, the red team, there were actually five rounds. We didn't even see two of them because the red team just dominated the blue team. And the red tribe is going to win. And that means that that Tyson is safe. That's all. Yay. I care about.
Yeah, I'm definitely rooting for Tyson and Sophie and some other people in that team. But were you surprised with the, I mean, tides or not? I felt like the tribes looked relatively evenly matched in terms of physical fitness. So,
yeah,
a little bit surprised with dominance.
Yeah, I mean, it probably did have a lot to do with the tides that really made it so one sided. I imagine it would have been at least a little bit more even, if not. I think that one round where like Kim really like took charge, like Kim's a beast, but also was probably helped out by the fact that the water was pushing them that way. Yeah. And so who knows what it would have been without that. But yeah, so I'm like, yes, Tyson is safe. And then I looked at the other tribe and I was like, no, all those people are not safe. Oh, God.
Yeah,
well, we do. We go to the red tribe first. We see what's up with them. And this is when we're talking about fire tokens some more, and they get a list of the prices. And this is when Nick tells us that, in his opinion, these are going to be important, and that the being a newer winner means that he will understand the advantages more, because everyone knows that newer winners are just better at math. It's just a fact. And so that's most of Nick's content for the entire two episodes is that little bit right there.
Yeah, he was name dropped a couple of times by the sort of single people alliance, I guess is what they're going by, the people who were not in the poker alliance as someone that they wanted to work with. But other than that, it was kind of invisible. Speaking of which, were you surprised with the breakdown of power in terms of, I feel like preseason, everyone was talking so much about who are the connections, who knows each other. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking this could be good or it could be bad. A lot of times these, you know, well, you don't want those target of those connections. I would always rather come in as someone who, you know, my biggest fear of ever being on a reality show is somehow getting on with someone I know and then having to deal with that relationship. Like, I would rather no one know me.
Well, yeah, I mean, a public connection has good points and bad points. A secret connection is all upside, personally. Sure. But I think the main factor here in the Red Tribe, and we'll definitely get to it, and Sandra is going to call this out sort of at the end of the intro segment, that as soon as she saw Amber and Rob, she was like, why didn't he tell me?
Yes.
And I think that's the key factor as to why the people that had the connections here are not going to work out, because they do not have Sandra. And without Sandra, they're not going to be able to have the numbers here,
which we have since learned from her seems to be a little bit more of a he was telling the truth in the moment when she was around saying he didn't want to go, but then changed his mind later kind of
right.
thing. Didn't check back in. You gotta check back in, you know?
I really loved that she's going to say this later. She's like, you know, I never take things personally, but this one I take personally. It's like, you never take things personally.
Pretty sure you take things personally.
So, okay. Red Tribe segment, though, we're going to hear from Wendell as well. He says he's basically being drafted into being the lead builder for the tribe. And that was not what he wanted. He didn't want to be this like sort of lead figure in any way. He wanted to be lying low as much as possible. And so even though he has been drafted this way, he does want to continue to lie low. So this is Wendell. Things not going entirely how he wanted them to, but doing his best to move forward in the way that he can.
Yeah, but I feel like I understand what he's saying, but that can always backfire as if someone is asking you to do work and to want to put you in the lead, you don't want to be a Steve Chicken Morris and then just say no and then be voted out because of that. So I think there's sort of the line of help out a lot, give input where needed, but just don't shoot anyone else's ideas down either.
This reminded me of in China, the guy that was, I don't want to be the leader.
Yeah, that's Steve Chicken Morris. Yeah. Him.
Oh, that was Steve Chicken. Okay. Yeah. I'm
better
than
sometimes. You know, you have this background, you can help. And he's like, I don't want to help. I don't want to be the leader. And then they're like, well, you didn't help then. So goodbye.
No. I'm talking about the guy that eventually does become the leader.
Oh yeah.
And then gets screwed over because he was the leader.
Yes. Yeah. That, Aaron.
Aaron. That was his name.
Yeah. It's, you know, that happens. But there was also reminded me of everything that Aubrey talked about with having been on a tribe with both Tony and Sandra as well in Game Changers, of like Sandra sort of trying to get her to do work and call out names and be more like that strategic leader. And she was like, I'm not going to do that. I see this trap. I don't want to be that person. Mm-hmm. So I would say for Wendell, better to be asked to be the like shelter builder leader rather than be the strategic leader.
Yeah. Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back. And we're back. So let's get back to the show. We then get the first of a couple of different sort of, I think of them as like, look at my kid. Showing kid pictures, only they don't have kid pictures. And so they're just talking about it.
They're all, the kid on the
they're
sock
all parents now. But Tyson's going to talk about how he has children now, which I was like, oh my God, he didn't have children the last time he played. That's so weird because
wasn't even married, man. Yeah. Look at him.
Yeah. But now all of a sudden he's, you know, stay at home dad. He's a full time Survivor player. He was really grateful that this has afforded him the opportunity to be able to stay at home and spend time with his kids because of the money that he won with Survivor. And great little segment from Tyson. I want to remind everyone that this is a Tyson standing podcast. And if you do not agree, then get out of here.
Yeah. I mean, we got the same Tyson quips and attitude, but just a slightly more refined version here, which I like.
All I'm going to say is we've seen three different versions of Tyson so far. Two snarky versions, one snarky but emotional version, and one out of one times we saw the snarky and emotional version, he won. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and this could go a long way. Like, Tyson especially is someone who, if you imagine Tyson coming back here, not married, no kids, don't think that he has the same emotional bonds that he got. He can't be in the kid sharing circle. So, yeah, and who else was in that? Wait, Amber was talking there.
Sarah was talking.
Yeah.
I don't even, does Sarah have kids?
Yeah, okay. Pretty sure she has a son. I want to say, I'm pulling this out of nowhere.
I always feel weird about these conversations. It's like, it happened to Amber and it happened to Parvati. Like, oh, you must feel so bad. Like, how could you leave your children like that? Like,
at first I was like, ooh, is someone calling them out?
It feels a little like, whoa.
Yeah. I'm like, well, you know, I'm trying to provide for my family here. Sometimes we work, you know?
There's like a better way to, at least better way to, like, oh, you know, how difficult is it
right
to have left, and not like, how could you do it?
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, a good portion of this cast has children. There's a difference because someone like Sandra, her children are a little bit older than, you know, Parvati's like 10 month year old, I want to say, at least at the time she was playing. So there is a little bit of a difference, but yeah, nobody looked at, you know, Jeremy last time he was out and said, oh, how could you leave with your kids?
Could you do it, Jeremy?
How could you do it? Yeah. So I'm glad that these people are kind of sticking by it. Like, oh, yeah, it was hard. But, you know, easy to say yes to come back to Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Got to do that, especially now that there's that $2 million.
Yeah.
That's looking good. So
it's a full-time job, Survivor. Sandra is being called queen, but she doesn't want to be called queen. Don't call me queen. I've only been calling myself that for years and years. Just please, not right now.
I think this is classic. Chill. Sandra not thinking she was going to play again. And I'm like, oh, shoot. Probably shouldn't have been doing that for a couple of years. But
yeah.
Oh, well.
She points out that she took out Tony and Sarah took her out. And so there's some weird history here. But that doesn't seem to hinder them.
No, but it's one of those things where it's like, I'm hearing a lot that you guys might have had past history that was negative, but I'm seeing a lot of you guys all working together and being good friends. So
the enemy, you know,
and you know, of course, we'll get to that more in the second part, but I feel like this should have been taken more into account, the fact that they all played together.
Yeah. I mean, if you're choosing between the trio of Tyson, Kim, Amber, or Tony, Sarah, Sandra, I would probably strike the poker trio first, even if the poker thing's not real.
Yeah.
The other one is probably going to explode at some point, even if you don't touch it.
Right. Right. And all of this is to say, like, there are no invalid reasons for targeting people in Survivor. Like, it's constantly said, oh, they all have kids, got to target them. Oh, they all like have the same religion. Oh, they all like pizza, got to target them. Pizza Alliance, got to get them out. And anything that bonds people together can be a reason to target them. And so it kind of doesn't matter if the poker thing is real or not, or even, you know, included Amber. Poor Amber.
Yeah. Caveat to that, though. No valid reason ever to target Tyson. I'm pretty sure that's...
No.
Law of Survivor. We head to the Blue Tribe, and they immediately were going to be talking about how Rob is just a big target, and they're going to tribal, and so that's it's not good for Rob. Parvati is going to be bonding over having kids. She talks about how she's not Miss Flirt anymore. I thought this was a weird example of her flirting. They cut to fans versus favorites with her and James.
Yeah, offering to give James a piggyback.
Yeah. Instead of like Cook Islands where she's like in the hot tub with Yule. Like I felt like there were better examples of her flirtatiousness.
Maybe that would have confused too many audience members about being like, wait, Yule? Yul has a history with Parvati?
Obviously. Oh,
what? People forget about that a lot.
Yeah. And then we get a confessional from Ethan talking about his experience with cancer, and that really, you know, the cancer is hard, but what's harder is after the cancer, the fear of relapse, having to live under that shadow constantly, and that being able to be here on Survivor feels like living again. And like, what a powerful confessional from Ethan. I'm so happy to see him there. I'm so happy that this is making him happy. No valid reason to target Ethan right now either. You better let him stay for a while.
Yeah, I mean, Ethan and Wendell are the only two of this cast that I've met in person. And when I met Ethan several years ago, I think he was in between his first bout of cancer and his second. So I can imagine how thinking you're over it and then that constant fear can be just crazy and life-changing. He had a good first episode, I'd say, overall. I feel like he's got enough connections to where he's not on his own, but not too many obvious ones where he's being targeted as much. And he's just so, even his winning game was kind of quiet, especially in comparison to so many of these other people. And I think a lot of people are probably just liking having him around as well. You know, I can't imagine being out there with Ethan and wanting to get rid of him anytime soon. So.
In this first episode, at least, I noticed him in a lot of different conversations in the background, not saying anything, with a bunch of a large variety of people. I don't know if that lasts, because he does, I think, eventually get lumped into the old school crew, but definitely speaks well of just what he was doing socially. We hear from Denise, who tells us, oh boy, here we go again. Going to tribal. I was so sad that we didn't get a confessional from Denise after she won her first immunity.
That was
immunity.
The very first text I got from my friend after watching the episode was them saying, I don't think we celebrated Denise not going to tribal enough. Like, that needed to be a bigger moment. You know, there's some milestones here that I feel like are mentioned of, oh, people hitting 100 days, or, oh, this is the first challenge you've ever won in the whole time you've been out there. This is a big thing. This is Denise's whole thing, is that she, not her whole thing, that's rude, but like a big part of her, you know, story is that she went to every tribal, and hey, maybe not every tribal anymore.
Yeah. Let me say this. If I was an editor on Survivor, I would have pitched for this to happen in the second tribal when Probst says, all right, it's time to vote. And then we start the music. I would have done a quick cutaway to Denise on the other tribe, just kind of like chilling, just like, yeah. Like, all right, back to the vote.
Yeah. Yeah. And hey, based on what we've seen, you know, with flashing to other shows and other clips, we're doing all kinds of fun editing stuff. So it's possible.
All right. So she's off with Adam, and Adam is pitching that he wants to be her Malcolm. This is an effective strategy. I don't know if Adam isn't doing this intentionally, but we've definitely seen this being used effectively on Big Brother a lot. When you have a reputation, using that, either yourself or somebody else using it, and sort of like saying, hey, this was a successful pair, let's replicate that, can be very effective. And so him pitching like, hey, I can be your Malcolm, she's like, I would love to have another Malcolm. He worked out for me. Let's go to the end, and then you tell me when you're planning on backstabbing me, and then I'll vote you out, and then I'll win the game. It'll be great. We'll both love it.
Yes. As a viewer, though, this is one of my biggest pet peeves. Like, I'll be the JT to your Steven. I'll be the, you know, Malcolm to your Denise. I don't know. Maybe it's just because, but we don't have to replace that person. We're just being, you know, why don't we just have a similar pair? I get it, though. And then this is, especially as the winner, Denise. She's like, sure. Yeah, good for me. I like this pairing. I don't think that they hit it at all. Mm-hmm. And that's not great. You know, there's probably a lot of individual pairs that had similar situations happen to them in this episode that we just weren't being shown as much. Whereas we did see the everyone else in the tribe being like, huh, where's Adam and Denise? Been gone a while, considering they have the map. And I feel like at that point, you got to just come back and be like, yeah, we talked.
One of the greatest strengths of Malcolm and Denise was how effectively they were able to hide how close they were. And so Adam and Denise trying to be the Malcolm and Denise, immediately call, like, they step away together for 1 second and they're already found out. So not exactly on the best trajectory to replicate their success at the moment. It is Parvati, by the way, who's like, hey, where is everyone? And oh, is Denise here? Oh, where's Adam?
I love the tactic of ask a question you know the answer to, just because you want to call it out. That's my favorite.
Yes. So Adam and Denise immediately are targets, and then we hear from Jeremy in a confessional. He says, and I thought this was interesting, Jeremy says, that's a rookie move. You don't want to rock the boat. Sometimes when you rock the boat, you fall out. And I thought this was a really interesting confessional from Jeremy about Adam, especially considering that Jeremy is the one on the wrong end of the vote at the end of the day here, and Adam is the one that gets the better of him. And so I think Jeremy's a little off in this confessional.
Yeah, I mean, it also just shows that older alliances are always going to trump newer ones, and in terms of target. It seems like at least from the way this game is going, you, like you said, that at least keep the people around who might be working together, whereas the people you know are working together, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Jeremy's saying sometimes when you rock the boat, you fall out. But I think maybe the editors are saying to Jeremy right here, sometimes when you don't rock the boat, you sink.
Well, here's the thing. Adam and Denise rock the boat. But they rocked the boat very early on into the game, which is smart, because if you are playing the game and you know how the editing works, the first name that comes up is never the one that actually goes home. So,
well, yeah, I mean, well, it's it's kind of like I think both tribes played it out this way, that both tribes were playing scared. And we saw it happen that in both instances, it was the people who were willing to step out and take a shot and take control that succeeded in both tribals. And so I think that this sort of thesis of we need to play conservatively, it failed both eliminated players in the first two episodes. And so I thought that was an interesting quote there from Jeremy. But we do head back to the Red Tribe. We hear from Tony that he's trying to hold himself back. He really wants to just zoom away. And they cut to when he goes like, woo, like running away back in Game Changers, which I could watch that clip on repeat, forever. But he says he's on probation. But he's like the Energizer Bunny, but he's like locked up. He's just like ready. And he says he's gonna lower their defenses and he's gonna suck a bunch of them. I love this from Tony.
Yeah, better first episode from Tony than I expected, for sure. I've never been, like, the world's biggest Tony fan. Like, I love him as a character. In terms of his win, I've always felt like it was interesting that he won, but I guess I just wasn't rooting for him in that first season when I watched him. On a rewatch, I find it more enjoyable, but I think the first time I was a little bit more, this guy's just getting on my nerves, trying too many things, being too loud, that kind of thing. But if he can keep this up of being a little bit quieter just until either the individual portion of the game or something where he can then let loose, then I feel like that'd be great. Plus, I'm just excited to, you know, you got to imagine it's building up and building up and building up. And whenever he does burst, it's going to be great.
Tony somehow being the winner of the all winner season, I think, is the most insane outcome available to us. So,
Yeah, I'd say that's definitely up there. I mean, I don't see it happening. And maybe it just needs to wait until the point where he realizes that he's not going to be able to get much farther and then just go for it. Do what, you know, to that point, who cares?
We'll see. We're seeing that Amber is struggling a little bit. She's not sure what to do at camp. She doesn't know if she should be searching for an idol yet. She's having trouble. You know, she's just like us in terms of, like, I don't know which tribe to root for, because if I'm safe, then my husband isn't. And she is his biggest fan, which I don't know if that hurt your feelings, Mary.
It did. I got called out for it, too. I was like, you know, I don't need people calling. We can tie. It's fine. I can be his biggest fan without, you know, knowing him. That's fine. My Twitter is not still set to open on Boston Rob's page. Fine. I don't know all their kids' names by heart. I think that it's interesting seeing Amber being the only person here who's having to both play Winners at War and Blood versus Water. So, well, I guess and Prob, but yeah, whatever. Amber, I know that she's been watching the show since she played. I don't know if she's been studying it, but she's definitely been watching it. And so I don't really, I don't buy that she's like completely lost and doesn't know how to play. I think it's more of, I know all the things I should be doing, but I don't know if I should do them out here, because it is, you know, and is it going to be weird because they wouldn't expect me, who hasn't played in a long time, to know those things? And so you've got that constant, you know, it's like Boston Rob has said, like, perceiving how other people are perceiving you, perceiving them kind of thing. And so with Amber, I think she was trying to just be the person they expected, whereas maybe it would have been good for her to just jump out there and try to run it, because maybe people wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah. And she tells us in confessional, if you sit back and relax, that's when something goes wrong.
Yeah.
I think we're a little bit going to see that, certainly in this tribal and then also in the next one with her. Then we get to the real meat here from the Red Tribe, and that is Yule asking Sophie out on a date. Sophie's me?
Oh, man. I love Sophie telling him, like, you gotta use a little bit more force. You can't just sneak that in there. You gotta ask a girl. If you're gonna ask her, ask her.
Which is perfect from Yule too, because he's like, he's such like the like nerdy sort of like that is how he would ask somebody on a date, I imagine, in my head, when I imagine him asking people on a date.
Yeah, so we'll go on a date later. And
so yeah, you know, like you know, we're getting dinner, you know, at this nice restaurant. You know, I was thinking just about that, and then you know, afterward we can talk about who to vote out and all of that stuff. Like, wait, what are the dinner part though?
We'll just go to the end together and should be good. I like this. And everyone doubted me with me saying that I think Sophie's going to be okay. I think that she, preseason, I was saying, I don't think it matters that she doesn't have all these connections going into it. I think she is a person who is appealing to work with, especially if you're someone like Yule or even, Adam or somebody. Adam's not on her tribe. Maybe one day. But anyone who does want that person to bounce information off of, and I think Yule definitely needs that too. So this is a fun
game. Yule tells us he knows he's disconnected from the community, but he's done his homework and he knows that Rob and Tyson are good friends and that Jeremy and Kim played poker with them and they even joked about being this big power alliance. And so Yule wants to gather the free agents. And then we hear from Sophie, who is going to be the real narrator of the tribe and lay out sort of where everybody stands. She says that Kim, Amber, and Tyson are the cool kids looking pretty. That Tony, Sandra, and Sarah are the gritty group. I don't know what that means.
I don't know, but they were showing like all of them climbing trees at that point. So.
And then herself, Yule, Wendell, and Nick are sort of the free agents in the middle. And she explains to us that she doesn't have a meat shield. People talk about meat shields. She has a nerd shield because nobody will ever say, oh, Sophie's the smartest one when she's got Yule sitting next to her talking about physics. And I loved this from Sophie.
And this is something that Gabby said also when she was playing of that was a similar reason why she wanted to team up with Christian, because she knew that she could talk with him and he would get her and then she would not look as nerdy by comparison. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really great, really great plan for Sophie. I love this sectioning out. I think she's got a great read on the tribe here. Not that it was too hidden, but, you know, and then it seemed like for people like Wendell and Nick, who probably didn't have a whole lot of other people to go to as well, tribe layout worked out well for them.
Yeah, great content from both Sophie and Yule. So they are looking pretty strong here. We then head back to the Blue Tribe. And now that Yule has asked Sophie out on a date, Rob is going to ask Parvati to prom. He did not get a corsage, though.
Yeah, I was expecting at least one of them to like get down on their knee, like how Amber did in All Stars when she was begging Kathy to keep her. I was kind of expecting that, but Rob and Parvati, they really are just like, I feel like they're playing this game in a, we're big targets, we're going to be voted out, might as well just try, right? Who cares? Kind of way. It seems like they've got nothing to lose, but they're still trying, and they're not throwing everything at the wall, but they're relying on each other. And this is the power couple that you don't get a lot on these shows, because normally they just go after each other or they try to split up. But I love that they've been able to put heroes versus villains aside for now and work together. And it was fun watching. I was shocked because I really thought that it was just going to be immediate. Everyone vote Boston Rob out, not even give him a chance. So
yeah. Parvati correctly, I think, points out to us that Rob doesn't have any other options. So he's got to come to me.
To be fair, I don't know how many other options she has, though.
It's fair. So we're going to hear this whole sort of scene here of that Danny is going to pitch to Ethan, Adam, and Ben that Rob is a big threat because of his connections, that they should maybe start thinking about him as a target. But then immediately we're going to see Rob humiliate Ben really just drag out Danny's name from him. And Ben is in confessional just like mad at himself. Like, I can't believe I did that. He's just too good, this guy. I didn't know what to say. Oh, my God. I don't know what to do. I'm sorry, everyone.
Yeah, you should never have gone on the walk with him in the first place.
just avoid him. You just don't look at him.
And my favorite other part of this was having Ethan there walking alongside them sort of in the background and not chiming in, not saying anything. And Ethan was also in that conversation with Danny. Mm-hmm. So easily Rob could have been, you know, talking to Ethan. Now, I like to think that maybe Ethan kind of sidled over to Rob and was like, hey,
I did wonder if that, yeah,
you should question Ben. I think Ethan was playing a little double agent already there, which was fun because, Ethan and Boston Rob go way back as well. So I think that I don't think that Ben necessarily had, like, while it was a little embarrassing and you felt bad for him, I wasn't expecting Ben to be the like giddy super fan who's just letting everything up. I don't know what I was expecting him to be like, but not that. But it also being that person and like Rob said, telling the truth to him put him on Rob's good side in a way, because he wasn't trying to hide it. He wasn't trying to lie. And Rob was like, yeah, you know, the fact that he came out and told me shows me that I can at least trust him at this point. Otherwise, I probably would have targeted Ben immediately. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that with such a poor showing, I think that it was put in as good a light as it could have been in terms of him making fun of himself over it. But so Rob is going to do his Rob thing and then go confront Danny about this. And so, I heard you saying my name. And she's like, I mean, I said everyone's name. I mean, you know, you've got targets, you've got connections, you know, what am I going to do? Yeah. And he's like, all right, I respect the honesty. Had she lied to me in the moment, I would know without a shadow of a doubt I couldn't trust her. And so Rob tells us it's looking like an old school alliance is coming together. Himself, Ethan, Parvati, and Danny. And they're going to show these new kids the rope.
Yeah, I mean, if this talking with Danny got her on his side, I mean, for the first vote, we'll see where it goes from here. I'm just like, I'm waiting for the ball to drop any day now. Thought it was going to be this episode, maybe it'll be the next one. This is never going to last. But it did get them together, and I feel like if I was out there and I was a winner, I would just feel all the time like I need to be aligned with anyone who will take me. And so if Rob is saying, hey, don't throw out my name, but I'm happy to work with you, from Danny's point of view, at least for the first vote, just to get by with it, might as well. If that's where the powers are going, because she's never going to be targeted over Rob unless it's by Rob. So might as well be with him.
Yeah, I mean, this is very much the case of nobody wanted to be the first one out, and so they were all playing scared. And what Rob does best is the sort of mob boss tactics of intimidation and control. And so the second somebody even tried to mention a name, he immediately jumped on it. He shut it down and he intimidated people into being like, well, if I say Rob's name, I don't want him coming for me. And so people were scared to say Rob's name. And he was able to take control of the tribe in that way. And so that's how all of a sudden it's starting to look like maybe Adam or Denise might be really in trouble because of that, just that one walk they took. And so we hear from Adam that he's, you know, he's very scared. Danny is scared. Everybody's scared. Nobody wants to be the first out. Jeremy's going to pitch to we get like a quick little montage of people's paranoia. And in this montage, we do get a quick little clip of Jeremy talking to Michelle, saying that him, Michelle, and Natalie seem to have a good connection. And we're going to see this pop up a little bit later, that Michelle is left out of the vote. And in one of the voting confessionals, that they even talked about how Natalie is the glue between Michelle and Jeremy. So this was kind of a trio, apparently, that was not super shown on the show, but definitely, I think, had an impact as to why they chose to take out Natalie instead of Adam or Denise. And this is also when Ethan is just, I have no clue what's going on.
Yeah. Interesting that they choose to take out Natalie instead of Jeremy. Be curious to know exactly what the thought process was there, because we didn't really see a whole lot of, we heard maybe Natalie and Jeremy, they have an alliance, and then it was just like all the votes on Natalie. One more thing about Ross and Rob, though, that I was thinking about. So talking about him having this sort of mob boss mentality, true, and his one of his worst, you know, performances in Heroes versus Villains was actually when he did maybe the least of this out of all of his games, tied between that and Marquesas. But he really was trying to be a little bit more just the good guy, hanging back, working with a big group, but not necessarily like they were sort of known as his group, but he wasn't doing a whole lot of like intimidating. It was more just he was still pointing the direction of where the votes should go.
No, you're either with me or you're against me, Mary. I don't know about that.
I don't know. But I feel like it was different. You didn't get as many like walk and talks in the same way that he's doing in this one. Maybe with Coach a little bit. But I feel like if your winning style is to play from the front, you might as well just keep trying. in that case. I think the question is, in because we don't see a whole lot of this, of at what point do Adam and Denise lose their target?
Well, so yeah, we definitely get there. So Natalie talks about how close she is with Jeremy. It's not blood, but it's pretty close. And she talks about wanting Adam out. But nobody really is willing to say a specific name. They're playing so scared that even though they've narrowed it down to two people, nobody wants to be the person that names one of those people. And you can see it in one of the conversations that... I think it might have been Natalie or Danny or somebody was just like, well, then I guess Adam, then maybe. And they're like, okay, Adam. And Parv is like, yeah, Danny said Adam. Danny said, if Danny says Adam, then I guess we're doing Adam. And they're like, but did we really say this? They're just so, we need somebody to be the name that names the name. But nobody really wants to do it. Ben says he feels fine as long as it's not him. But he does give Adam the heads up that he might be in trouble because he feels like Adam is potentially an ally that they can work out. I know that I have actually hung out with Ben and Adam together. They, I believe, met at Reno. So they do have a little bit of pre-existing relationship. Adam is a very, very sort of like welcoming guy when you meet him, especially at Reno. He's so he's very easy to get along with. So I can see why Ben would feel comfortable with Adam, especially in a tribe of people he doesn't otherwise know. And therefore kind of be like, oh, well, I kind of want to maybe keep him around if I can, just kind of give him a little heads up, see what he can do. Otherwise, I'm fine. And so that's how Adam gets the heads up. And I did like this as well, that when he's telling Adam, it's probably you because you walked away. I'm just like, what? I walked away for like a second. Like, he's like, oh no. He's like, he's trying to argue the case with Ben. Ben's like, look, I didn't come up with this.
Yeah. And at that point is when Adam needs to be like, okay, you know what? Better to be the person who throws out another name than to be the person going home, which is always good. And it's it's funny. It's funny when they're sitting around not wanting to throw out a name, but that's really, it's like the second worst thing that you can do, because we've seen so many times in Survivor, the person who leads one vote could be the person who goes home next, which is also a big thing on Big Brother, is you don't want to be, you know, the power can flip so easily in these games, especially when it is like returning players, that you need to be vocal enough so people are sure that you're with them, but not so vocal that you are going to be the next scapegoat. So.
Yeah. And I think that Adam does a really great job here. He is upset. He proposes, what about Natalie or Jeremy? He goes to Denise and lets her know that that they're in trouble. But he says, don't worry, we're going to fix this. And so he goes and he pitches to Ethan, and he tells Ethan that it should be Natalie or Jeremy. Ethan then pitches to Rob and Parvati. And Rob is like, I wouldn't mind that. But I don't know, like Ethan vouches for Adam in this conversation. He's like, I think we can trust him. But both Rob and Parvati are like, I don't know if we trust them, but we're not. We may be about the plan, but I don't know about trusting them. And then him, Ethan, and Parvati. Rob, Ethan, and Parvati. Rob says to Ethan and Parvati, us three to the end. Which I kind of giggled at, because at this point, Amber is still in the game. but there's still a lot of sort of tiptoeing around, like Adam or Denise in front of Natalie, as they sort of try to figure out who's going to be the vote. And this is when we get the confessional from Rob and Parvati, like, what's going on? Like, why aren't we being, are we being punked? Well, we have to play Survivor for everybody, I guess.
Yeah, which also looks great on, especially Parvati, who is saying, you know, in her confessionals, like, I feel like I might be out of the loop then, because I'm not getting targeted. Aren't I supposed to be the one getting targeted? Which is, looks great, because in Boston, Rob has been doing this since like All Stars, of the whole, like, I think I know what's going on. Maybe not. Maybe it could be me. And you know, you always gotta cover your bases so those editors can't make fool of you.
Yeah. It's very much like it's the Dr. Will as well in Big Brother. Yeah. Like, what are they doing? They're such idiots for not targeting me.
So it was very Will and Boogie watching Harvey and Boston Rob talk. And I've never been like a crazy Parvati fan either, but seeing her in this light, like the two of them really do look like the masters of the masters playing here.
Yeah. So we get to tribal. Jeff feels left out because nobody's talking to him. He asks Jeremy, like, so who left? Who left the group? Jeremy's like, I don't remember. Jeff's like, hey, let me play. You're supposed to tell me things. Not fair.
I just want to hang out. Do you want me to do another accent? Like, can I get some more champagne?
What okay, well, hold on. $3 million. $3 million, but you have to tell me things.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be fun. I feel like they could just sit there and be like, we're not saying anything until you give us some food, maybe a tarp.
I noticed this sort of moment here during tribal as they're talking. Parvati says nobody should feel comfortable, and a lot of people do. And right away, Jeremy's like, wait, what? And then a little bit later, we see Jeremy sort of give Parvati a look, and Parvati's like guiltily looks away. And then Jeremy looks over at Rob, and Rob's kind of like, and he guiltily looks away. And then Jeremy goes to Ben and he's like, are Parvati and Rob setting something up? And Ben's like, I'm thinking maybe, I don't know. Cause obviously Ben's in on that too. Apparently there was even more whispering that went on that we didn't even see.
Which is surprising. Not that there was more whispering. Surprising we didn't see it, because pretty much immediately after that, they go to the vote. And I'm like, oh, well, it's still going to be Natalie or Jeremy at this point, because we weren't given any kind of, like, they didn't have time to do that. If the vote had flipped away from them, we would have had to have seen some whispering. Otherwise, that would have been completely out of nowhere.
Yeah, I would imagine, and I would hope this is part of the reasoning, that they're shying away from showing the whispering if it doesn't change anything. Because if they show the whispering too much, when it never seems to change the outcome, then the whispering is not exciting anymore. It's just like, okay, well, can we just get through the whispering now? Because they're just going to do the same plan anyway. So I think they want to save it more for when there's actually something at stake and something might actually change.
Right. The other thing I noticed in this tribal council was that Adam, I believe, was sitting like way far by himself on the end, which
he apparently was the only one that didn't get up and whisper.
Yeah. And if I was Adam, I would feel nervous about sitting over there. I don't know what the rules are. If you can just come in and be like, no, I do not want to be on the end. I want to be in the middle where I can hear people, where I can get information.
All right. So they go to vote. And I got this from Dalton Ross's article as well. It's a great one. If you hadn't read it, then you should go read it. But he got the voting confessionals from each person. And so I did like delete some of the like really boring ones. But Adam votes for Natalie. And he says, if this doesn't go my way tonight, I'll be crying at the edge of extinction tonight. And nobody wants to see that. Ethan votes for Natalie, and he says, Natalie, you're the sweetest person in the world, but you and Jeremy together are a superpower, and we can't have that right now. It's good to be back. Parvati votes for Natalie, says, I like you a lot, but you're the glue that sticks Michelle and Jeremy together, and you said that I was weak. Didn't know that. So that, again, sort of confirmed to me that was a trio people were worried about. Ben just says, I'm sorry, and then uses the rest of his time to like look for some sort of clue or idol, which is like such a Ben thing to do. Danny goes and says, I really hate to do this, but I'm really worried about how connected you and Jeremy are. Sorry. Hope you can forgive me one day. Jeremy votes for Adam and just says, I don't even know. He knew it was coming. Natalie votes for Denise, says, if this plan doesn't go the way it's supposed to, I don't know. Rob votes for Natalie, says, sorry, Natalie, somebody had to be first. Rob also was looking for like a clue or something.
Oh, good for Rob.
And then Michelle votes for Denise, says, I hope it's not you, but more importantly, I hope it's not me. So that was where they were. I would love to be able to know all of these all the time, because it's so telling about where people actually stood and about like the actual reasoning of why I think the people who were voted out were voted out.
And knowing this kind of thing after the fact like this just is great, because it provides information. I can understand why they don't want to put it in the show, but you know, if we could get these, you know, after the episode's released, that'd be great every time. I've never thought of the looking for the idol around the voting confessional. That's new. Interesting to see multiple people do that. I expect that Ben will be looking through every bit of food that they are given in any kind of reward for idols and licking the plates clean and all that kind of thing. So that's interesting. I wonder if Rob was looking to see if anyone was listening in any kind of little spy shack. If that was happening.
Also, apparently Natalie said a couple of times, "I hope everyone just sticks to the plan," which I thought was really funny considering where that came from.
Yes. Yeah. Never say stick it to the plan. So it sounds like from those votes, though, it sounds like they were planning on splitting the vote between Denise and Adam.
Yes. Yeah. But that it would have fallen on Adam, because basically Michelle is saying, "I hope it's not you. Like, I'm voting for you, but I don't think it's going to be you. Right. I think it's going to be Adam, but more importantly, I hope it's not me." But obviously then they go and they just went all in on Natalie. And I think they emphasized the blindside portion of it in the hopes that she wouldn't have an idol, although they kind of screwed that up because Jeremy is definitely onto them by the time the vote happens. And if they did have an idol, he would have definitely, I think, used it or prompted her to use it. So that's how it goes.
Strategy in terms of this, what do you think about if you're one of these people in the main alliance? Do you think this was the right way to go, even just looking at if you have the choice of Michelle, Natalie, or Jeremy? I mean, if Natalie is the obvious glue between the two, I do understand that. I think I would be looking also at like retribution, and we know that Natalie can hold a grudge and then come back in full force. So I think that that might be another reason to have targeted her over them.
I would imagine if I'm Rob or Parvati and I have a group of four, and that means that I need to be able to pull people to get numbers in order to survive the next two votes, that if I vote out Adam this week, that leaves the now trio, Michelle, Natalie, and Jeremy, versus the foursome of the old schoolers. And it leaves Ben, Denise, who just had votes put on her, and who's left? There's one more.
Parvati, Rob, Michelle, Denise, Ethan, Danny.
Well, Danny's part of the old school group.
Ben, that's it. Adam, Natalie.
Right, because there's not three left, because one of them's gone. So it leaves Denise and Ben by themselves. And so I think that at that point, you have to imagine that Jeremy and Natalie definitely smart enough to go, okay, we need to now pull in Denise and Ben, and it needs to be five against four. And it's easier for us to pull those people in because we're only three and they're four. And we can probably get Denise because she's probably mad that Rob, who is in charge of the vote, chose to put votes on her. We just went along with it because we didn't want it to be us. I would definitely be worried of that trio being able to overcome my situation, versus if you do the blind side, you take out Natalie. Yes, Jeremy's mad at you, but I think it's harder for all of those disconnected people to come together. Michelle, Jeremy, Adam, and Denise are, yes, a pair, and then you have Ben. So like they're more separate, and it's less, I think, easy for them to coalesce together, all five of them against your four. I think you have a better chance. So I actually do like the move.
I like it in terms of everything you're saying, but thinking one step farther, looking at next week, the issue with getting rid of a targeted pair is that you still have Rob, who has a pair in this game. And so you're setting the precedent of, we got to target the pairs. And there was nothing done to make people like Danny, Ethan, Denise, Adam really necessitate them to stick with Parvati and Rob over Michelle and Jeremy. Like, that group of four could easily jump back, or not group, but those two groups of two sort of could easily jump back over to Jeremy and Michelle and target Rob or Parvati next. Mm-hmm. It would be pretty easy to do that. And they've already sort of, yeah, set that idea out there of, we need to target the pairs. It's this complicated thing of, I got to get rid of people who are grouped up because they're a group who could swing more votes over. But also, they've broken down their pair shield.
Well, I mean, if you look at Rob and Parvati at the games that they've played, they've always played from the top. They've always played from controlling a group. They've always been the ones to sort of start to weed out the people in the group. They are in the center of the onion. They have never really been turned on in a big group. And so, so I think that they're looking at this like, this is our group. We're going to make, we're going to do what we do to keep them with us, even when it's not in their best interest. And we need to like just keep our tight group and then focus on destabilizing everybody else. And so that seems to be the game plan. It's what's worked for them in the past. We'll see if it works for them this time. It's definitely still an uphill battle. Even if they are able to keep their group together, those other five could come together. And it does seem like we're hinted, we're given hints that that might be happening as Ben is trying to gather up some people to go against them. But in the meantime, we're going to head to the Red Tribe. And we hear that Sandra, Yule, and Sarah talking together. And basically, Sandra is pitching that she wants to get Amber out because Amber is too connected. And she's saying that we should sort of like work together to get this person out. She says she's taking it really personally. She doesn't usually take things personally, but she's taking this really personally that Rob didn't tell her that he was coming out. And so she wants Amber to be one of the first to go. And then Yule brings up the Poker Alliance. And then he tells us like, this is great. I can't believe this happened. That basically that Sarah and Sandra have come to me and they're trying to build this sort of coalition against Amber, but we already exist. But this is great. We outnumber them. So myself, Wendell, Sophie, and Nick are in the middle. We have leverage. He's telling Nick and Wendell, we're in a much better position than I ever thought we'd be. Like, this is fantastic for us. Wendell's like, I'm locked and loaded with you guys. Yule tells us nobody will know this alliance exists. And that they, with the extra numbers of Sarah and Sandra, they will control the game. And so, that was a small little sentence that I missed at first, that this seems to be something that they're really working to keep a secret. The fact that these four are together. And that's one of the reasons why Sandra kind of falls in here thinking that she's building numbers, but really is just coming to the bigger side or coming to the side that has control to take out Amber. Who knows what will happen in the coming weeks. So some interesting stuff there from Yule.
Yeah, and it's great not only that they have more numbers, but that they are, it's like that thing about you not wanting to throw out the name. They're not having to throw out any names. They're allowed to just be the number to Sandra, let her think that she's pulling this together, let her think that she's running things, and then they can do whatever they want. The other thing is, if they choose to, if they're given the ability based on, you know, votes or tribe wins to continue this kind of thing into a merge, that I think is this group of four at the very least seems much more solid and undetectable than any of the other groups we've seen, because there's not anything obvious tying them together. Yep. Which is great. And it, you know, swaps and all that can always mess things up. But at this point in time, I would say these would be the four people to look out for in terms of the most solid and undetectable.
Yeah. So we hop back over to the Blue Tribe. We hear from Michelle that she is concerned that she was left out of the vote here. She has something to prove based on what happened to her in her season when she won. People felt like she didn't deserve it. And now she feels like she doesn't have the numbers and she's not feeling great. So, I think we've sort of sussed out that the reason she was left out of the vote is because she was seemingly too connected to those people. So I'm very interested to know where Michelle goes from here. Does she decide she wants to get in with the supposed numbers of the previous vote, or will she kind of go in with Ben potentially and the group that he's trying to build? So Ben talks about being intimidated by these old school people. He says that Rob and Parv are pulling the wool over people's eyes. He says himself, Michelle, Jeremy, and Adam need to pull together to take out an old schooler. I imagine that Denise would be coming along with them, considering she seemingly is with Adam, and that would be a 5-person group. But we don't really hear anything else from them about this. I have no idea if Ben has a solid lock on these people, or if he's just kind of throwing out names and they're not actually going to come together. But this is definitely how Rob and Parvati could end up on the wrong side of a vote if this group comes together.
Yeah, and you never know. This is potentially something that could have even been before the vote, and that we're just getting it now to show us something from the blue tribe. You never know. You never know. I do think that that's my biggest fear in this situation. But I also think that Rob and Parvati, like I said, they're playing from a position of we expect this to happen at some point. So we're just kind of doing everything we can in the meantime. I would expect that Rob and Parvati would ditch each other and throw the other under the bus if need be to save their own self. Oh, but, you know, that's a temporary action. We'll see. And who knows? You know, tribe wins. Maybe they'll be able to hang out for a little longer. We'll see.
Yeah. And big caveat, of course, to all of this is that, like I said, we don't have live feeds. We're just basing everything off of the edit, and the edit could be wrong. We can only go off of what we see. So like when I say I'm impressed by Adam getting the target off of his back, for all I know, it was Denise. Like he tells Denise, and then Denise does some work that we just weren't shown. And for whatever reason, Adam is given the credit. But because all we saw was Adam getting all of the credit, I'm going to give Adam all of the credit because that's what we saw, and we can't speculate about anything else at this moment. So that's just the way things are in Survivor analysis. So we see that Jeremy has been bequeathed. He got the bequeathment. Now he has two fire tokens, just like he used to have two idols. I guess one is cooler than the other, though.
Yeah, he's got his fire tokens. Hmm. And I think there was absolutely zero surprise there that Natalie left it to him. I'm trying to decide if I like this more or if I feel like they should be able to just keep them on Extinction. I mean, we wouldn't get to use the word bequeath, so...
We need bequeath.
Going for, I don't know. Yeah. Also, what, you know, the idol from this season, pretty cool looking.
Oh, yeah.
This sort of skull and crossbones kind of thing. Just thought that was fun. It's no sword, but...
It should have been made out of fire tokens.
Well, it does appear to have fire tokens on it as the eyes. Didn't get... Maybe they're just, you know, maybe...
I wonder if you can pull them out and be like, these are mine now.
I wouldn't be surprised in a game like this. Who knows? You hand it back and Jeff's like, no, hang on. I'm pretty sure this thing had two eyes the last time I saw it. I don't know. I think it's fun. I think it's a little hilarious, the little boxes with all the names on them. That when you get voted out, everyone's got their little... They look like little sorority pin boxes.
Yeah.
Anyway,
like Valentine's, like school, and you're at school and you had like Valentine's Day boxes.
Shoe box that you can put it in, drop it in there. That would be fun. Good time.
Man, if only I could go back. Now I would know that anytime I dropped in a Valentine, I'd just be like, bequeath. I would have been so popular with the ladies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
My bequeathments.
Stop. Okay. Let's please move on.
We do head to Extinction, and we just, again, this whole thing was just like a kind of a boring segment to me. It was just like one big scavenger hunt, like Natalie climbs a hill and then finds a thing.
Yay. Scavenger hunts, in order for them to be good, need to have some competition.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is also why we didn't have this in the first Edge of Extinction. We didn't have this until there were multiple people on the island.
Yeah, watching people like fight over things was much more interesting.
Yes. And this is a debate I've been having of like, just for draft reasons, who am I supposed to be giving credit to in terms of like finding or having this idol? Is it the person who finds it on Edge of Extinction? Is it the person they bequeath it to?
Sell it to. If it was bequeathed, then it wouldn't cost money.
Okay. Sell it to. Yeah. And then she does decide to sell it to Sandra, which I think that's a valid option if you're looking for someone who you think is going to feel desperate enough to want to. I mean, regardless, I feel like if I'm saying, hey, do you want this fire token that may or may not come in handy later? Or do you want an idol? I'd be like, just give me the idol. That's, I mean, sure. What do you, one fire token? Sounds like a bargain. Yeah. I'll take that one.
I think Natalie said that she wanted to give it to Jeremy, but she couldn't. So she just kind of gave it to Sandra because it's Sandra. I don't know. So her reasoning didn't really make much strategic sense to me. Anyway.
Wanted it to be someone that wasn't expected, I guess. They don't have a history together.
Sure. But like, I don't know. Okay.
I would say if you're thinking about when I get back in the game, I want some targets there that I can target ahead of myself. Maybe that would be,
that makes sense.
That would be good thinking. I don't know. If I was on Edge of Extinction, I'd probably be so checked out that it's like, who cares? Give it to whoever.
Well, we have the immunity challenge, and we see what's been called Dad Bod Rob just like keeping his legendary challenge status by just like launching people over the
literally
the thing.
Throwing everyone in his tribe. Yeah.
I don't know. The other tribe did it fine because they were rolling the rolling right. wheel so that when you jump on it, it rolls and you roll over it. But no, we've got to muscle through this thing and throw people over.
Well, I mean, I was trying to figure out how deep the water is, but based on where it seemed like they were sort of being able to stand, if you're tall enough, if the water's like 5 feet and you're closer to six, and so you're tall enough to get underwater to where your shoulders can be under, have someone stand on your shoulders, and then you just stand up and they jump. I feel like that's probably a faster way of doing it than trying to sling someone over the thing and then roll it. And I don't know. I mean, plus they were playing catch up at that point. It's like when you start running across the barrels instead of trying to stack them. You know, you just kind of got to do whatever you can at that point.
Yeah.
But I don't know why he had to do it by himself. I assume that there was a rule where they could only launch one person over at a time or something.
He was the only one capable of launching.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who else is on his tribe? I feel like Jeremy could have done that, right?
Jeremy needed to conserve his strength because he needed it for the utter domination he had on the ring toss at the end.
Yeah. Jeremy's been practicing his carnival games.
Clearly. And so they managed to catch up, and I'm like, yes! And then I go, oh no! Tyson's invulnerable now. I don't like this. And so Red Tribe, it's scramble time.
Yes.
Scramble time. Tony is going to kick it off. If anyone wants to volunteer, please go ahead. Surprisingly, nobody takes up the offer. Nick, so we're gonna get a quick montage. Nick wants Amber. Amber, Tyson, and Kim talk about wanting Nick or Sandra. So Tyson is gonna propose Nick or Sandra to Wendell, but Wendell says no, that'll start a war. So Tyson says, all right, Nick or Tony then? And then Wendell goes to Sandra. He says to Sandra that the smarter move is Amber because of her ties, but Tyson is a huge threat. And then we're going to see Amber talk about really wanting Sandra out because she's the kind of player that will run around and rat you out and say that you said somebody's name. Then we cut to Sandra going to Nick and ratting Tyson out and saying his name to Nick. First, she goes to Nick and says, they want you out. This is when we find out that she has Natalie's idol. And so she says, the reason I feel comfortable going around and doing this is because I can afford to, because I've got this idol. Yeah. And so she also goes and she tells Tony that Tyson said his, oh, Tony, Tyson said your name. And now Tony's like, what? Tyson said my name. Okay. Here we go. Nets game on time. I'm going straight to 10. Tony's going to go and he's going to tell Sandra and Sarah and Yule, we're all voting Tyson. We're going to pretend it's somebody else. Then we're going to vote Tyson. That way we can keep Amber and Rob together as big targets. And Tyson goes home.
Yeah, this was sad. And I do want to reiterate here. We're allowed to be biased on this podcast and have favorites, just like everyone else.
As long as it's Tyson.
As long as it's Tyson. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm so thrilled watching everyone play this game, and I'm literally happy to see all of them. So I think even though I was having a hard time, I'm not the biggest Tony fan, but I was having a hard time thinking about who I wanted to. Well, no, I wanted Tyson to win this, like this outcome. But I didn't necessarily feel the need to see Tony go either. I didn't know. I really did not know who I wanted to go home at this point. It was rough.
It was really a case of like, oh, no, not that person. Yeah. Oh, no, not that person, though. Oh, but not that person.
And especially when it gets down to the point where you're like, it's either going to be Tyson or Amber or Kim, because we don't see them pulling anyone else in to get anyone else out. And at that point, I was having a really hard time. You know, I think at that point, and this is really when we see like the first him talking about how this is going.
Well, first, Tyson is going to sort of catch a little bit of wind. He's going to ask Yule and Nick, like, what's up here? And Yule's like, well, I mean, there people are talking about this poker alliance. And Tyson's like, oh my God. He's like, but you guys have my back, right? And yeah. Yule's like, well, I don't know. And so Tyson tells us, at that point, my strategy went from trying to dictate the game to pure survival mode. And yep. We cut back to him like, so, I mean, I'll vote out Amber or Kim. You know, I mean, either one of them should go. I mean, really, if you think about it, you have to break them up. Like, if either one of them leaving breaks them up. So that's what I think. I'm with you guys. This seems to work. Yule and Nick do seem to accept him here. We're later going to see Yule vouching for Tyson a little bit in other conversations. Tyson tells us he's forfeiting this battle in order to win the war.
Which is okay, but I don't know. I think the strategically smarter move here would have been to get rid of Tyson for a lot of reasons. I think at that point that you're seeing that he has that survivalist mode where he's going to be willing to jump ship. He could do that on you. He could do that on anyone. And I would say, make him feel comfortable. Tell him to vote out Amber or Kim. And then you got to, at that point, got to get rid of Tyson. He's acting nervous enough where you know he doesn't have an idol, probably. And so I would just go for him. I think that keeps that Amber and Rob target in the game. Kim doesn't seem to have any traction. And I do think that probably Tyson was holding them together a little bit more than the two girls would have been on their own. Like, I think Kim and Amber, they'd be happy to separate from each other if they were given a better option. You know, and they're just less threatening if they're already on the bottom. I mean, what's the likelihood that Kim's going to be able to next episode, like, pull together a crew? Probably pretty small. She might be able to join one, but Tyson is just more able in that way. So I would say, I think they should have voted out Tyson. I mean,
I completely agree. I think that was exactly Tony's logic, and I think it was good logic. Right.
Yeah, I think that was smarter. And I do wonder at some point of if they had just stuck together and targeted Sandra. I mean, she probably would have played her idol, but if they had been able to just stick with that, would they have been able to pull anyone else in and get that across? But I think from everything we had seen, Yule and Sophie and Wendell and Nick and those middle people, I think they had already decided they were sticking with Sandra and Sarah and Tony.
Well, here's my theory as to why this worked. I think that Tyson had been developing a relationship with Yule and Nick and these people, because when he's talking with them, he seems to have a good rapport, enough so that they do let him in on some things. And then he's like, but you guys have my back, right? Like, I'm with you guys. It seems like there is a rapport already built in there. And they seem to believe him when he says he's with them. And so I think that Yule and whoever else is discussing this decision decides that there's a group of four in the middle of two groups of six. Similar to Robin and Parvati, a group of four is not enough to carry a vote for two tribals until after two tribals, right, basically. Then right. You can tie. You're not in the majority. And so he needs to continue to play these sides off of each other. With that being the case, if he has a good rapport with Tyson and he believes that Tyson will be with them, then I think that Yule plans on flipping back over and targeting the Sandra, Tony and Sarah group. If not next tribal, then very soon. I would honestly imagine it would be next tribal that they have it, because that's the easiest way to do it. You don't want to trust Tony and Sarah and Sandra to be with, those are all very duplicitous players, to be with a group of four, even though you're trying to hide it that you're a group of four, in order to take out the really threatening two remaining players left on the other side. Like, that's a 7-2 advantage. That's when the big group starts to look at itself. And so if they're able to drag in Tyson and maybe even Kim, even just Tyson, adding on to that four gives them a 5, and that means that they're solid from that point forward. So that's where I think Yule is probably, that would be my theory as to what Yule is thinking, and if not just Yule, maybe also Yule and Nick and Wendell and Sophie, whoever else is part of that decision making process. That's my theory, at least.
I'd be curious to see in the next couple episodes if that's just a Yule thing and if that's something that he's doing, or maybe, you know, this is a thing we also see on Big Brother sometimes, is if Sophie maybe has her own person, maybe she's starting to connect with, you know, him or somebody, you know, like if we could have these, the alliance with each of them pulling in another person and being able to have those connections, I think that would be great. On the other hand, if it's just Yule, super impressed with Yule for being that, you know, ahead of the game in terms of thinking down the line like that. But I think we're going to get a lot of flips. I do not see, no matter who's, which group comes to power any given episode, I don't see any power lasting more than an episode or two before someone realizes what's going on and then jumps and flips. No one's going to be blind to what's happening in this game.
Yeah. And like what I talked about before, like the reason I'm saying Yule, Yule, Yule is because that's what we saw. I saw Yule right. talking to Tyson. I saw Yule talking to Tony and convincing Tony. And I saw Yule doing most of the work and decision-making in the episode. I assume that this was a group decision, but from what we saw, it was all Yule. Yule is going to get the credit. So then we see Kim, once the target is off Tyson, now Kim is like, oh crap. This does not feel right. Oh. Kim is able to sort of suss this out. She's not stupid. She recognizes that this is not going well for her. She's not used to being in this spot. And she's not handling it particularly well. She's like, hey guys, announcing myself, falling to the ground. This sucks. Please don't vote me out. Please, guys, this poker thing, I swear it's not real.
Can I talk with you guys? Oh, am I interrupting? Never good look. And this is the difference between someone like Kim and someone like Tyson. And Tyson said this before. He has experienced being on the bottom. He has experienced mm-hmm. being blindsided. And when you've come and only won and won easily and from the top, you haven't experienced that before. And so this is, at least Kim's able to recognize it, but it's she doesn't know how to react to it. And I would say it's lucky that she doesn't have her husband out there.
And I would say, like, to be fair to Tyson, I think he's either been in power or blindsided. Like, he's never been on the bottom, really. He's never, like, basically, he's always been the person that when you are in power, you take him out and then he's gone and he doesn't experience, like, who he lost the game for everybody in Heroes Villains. And so it's interesting now to see Tyson playing a game where he manages to survive that blindside. And now he's on the bottom. And how can he play this way? So
a lot of it is age and just trying. And is that I don't want to give up. I don't want to. I think especially in Token Jeans, he was content with being the funny guy and sort of knew that he had some power and was not watching his back. And in Heroes versus Villains, he was trying to actively play from the front in a way that amplified his target and then didn't see, you know, twists coming. And so in this one, I think that he was prepared to be blindsided almost. Like, I think he was prepared to be targeted. And because of that, when you're looking out for it, you could probably see it a little easier. And he did not give up and roll over, which was great. So.
Yeah, and I definitely saw for Kim the weight of her legacy. This was not how I expected things to go coming back. Like, she desperately did not want to be the first one out. She's known as one of the best, if not the best players of all time. And so for her to be the first one out would have been so devastating for her. I think that weight that she is carrying has a lot to do with the response that she had there. So we get to Tribal. And Tony says that he's stealing a page out of Sandra's book, anybody but him. In regards to, like, is he playing very hard? I took this to mean in the moment and on the rewatch that this is him explaining that he backed down about the Tyson thing. Because the one conversation I accidentally left out here, Yule talks to Tony and says, Tyson is with us. Tony says, I don't believe it. Yule says, it's locked. We're good. Tyson is with us. Tony's like, we'll see. We'll see. And so I think this to me is signaling that Tony was pushing for Tyson. Yule is arguing against it and Tony backs down because he doesn't want to be playing too hard. And so he's willing to concede this and not stick his neck out too much. And he's stealing a page out of Sandra's book, anybody but him. Kim gets really excitable about this poker player alliance not being a thing. Even more stuff there from Kim. And also a lot of talk about the $2 million Jeff, this is $2 million. Like, much more so, like, it's certainly $2 million is a lot more than $1 million. It's double. That's a fair amount more. But I wonder if, like, the fact that these are all winners, you might think, like, they already won $1 million. What do they need $2 million for? But I wonder if, like, because they won, the money is that much more real to them and therefore more desirable to them. Like, when my thought of, like, oh, if I ever played Survivor, like, I want to win. Oh, and $1 million would be nice too, because I have no concept of what winning $1 million would feel like. But if I knew what that felt like and it felt really great, then the concept of $2 million would be all the more enticing, even more so than players who had never won $1 million, I think.
Right. And we've talked about the fact that a lot of them have kids or families, and a lot of them also are in positions where this is their job, or to some extent, you know, has been a huge portion of their income and livelihood. I think it's also a little bit of like a gambling thing. Like, if you're playing slots and you win, you know, $100, you can be like, wow, that was great. Good job. And then a couple minutes later, it wears off and you go, but it could be $200. If I keep playing, if I try again, maybe it'll be $200. And you don't think, maybe it'll be zero also. And that's kind of both a metaphor for this game and the prize here, but also you won, you came in first. And if you play again, you might come in first again, and it's going to be awesome. Or you might get Kim Stradland.
Mm. All right. So it's time to vote. We get some voting confessionals again from Dalton Ross. Nick votes for Amber. He says, two shots at $2 million is too many. You're a nice lady, but I've seen Survivor All-Stars, and I don't want that to happen again. Sophie votes for Kim, says, you're just way too cool for me. Sandra votes for Amber, and this was really interesting to me. Sandra says, unfortunately, the majority of the tribe wants you gone because of your husband, and it's not fair. Now, I've heard a lot of talk about how a lot of people are assuming that Sandra was really the main push, the main drive behind targeting Amber, largely because of her confessionals about being upset at Rob and saying that she wants Amber to be one of the first to go. But this to me indicates that maybe she really meant it when she said one of the first to go, and perhaps was not as anti-Amber as we assumed. And again, from what we saw in the montage, we never really see Sandra saying that she wants Amber out. We see Nick wanting Amber out. We see Wendell talking about wanting Amber out. We see Yule arguing the case for Tyson and to not go out. I really feel like it is this group in the middle that pushed for Amber, and that the Sandra, Tony, Sarah group was like, okay, we might actually prefer Tyson, because remember, Sandra's the one that got Tyson in trouble in the first place, but they ended up saying, you know what, we'll agree to go Amber in for this first vote.
And I think a lot of this has to do, if I could jump into Sandra's brain, I would say, to us, we had lots of confessionals from her talking about Rob and Amber, and particularly Rob, and how she felt hurt by him not telling her she's going to be out there and all that. I think she wants him out and her out, but she also doesn't want to be the one to do it, because she knows getting Amber out, Rob is going to look at her for that. They just spent, you know, 36 days together. And I also think that Yule and Sophie probably pushed for this, knowing that they're not going to be the ones who are going to get pegged for this. I think if you look at this tribe and Rob looks over and sees his wife has been voted out, he's going to say, who do I think's in power over there? Probably Sandra and Tony and all of them, which is another reason why this was, well, you know, whereas if they had voted out Tyson, I think that it's less of a, there's no one on the other tribe who's going to look and point fingers, probably.
Yeah.
Which could be good or bad, depending on who you are. But if you're trying to play this middle, like Sophie and Yule are, they probably want fingers to be pointed, not at them, but at other people.
Yeah, I really feel like, and again, this is, it's all speculation, but based on the sort of details of what I was picking out on the rewatch, I really feel like this was Yule's move, or the middle group's move, to advocate to keep Tyson around so that they probably could pull him in. And maybe that's just like wishful thinking on my part, because that means that Tyson is probably safe next week. I am a Tyson stan, but in terms of my analysis, I will keep it fresh for you guys. If I think Tyson's in a bad spot, then I'll say so. And I think he's definitely still in danger if this is not the case, but I do feel like, based on these sort of small details, that it felt to me like Yule was pushing to keep Tyson Sandra and Tony conceded and went for Amber instead of Tyson. And the reason for that, I would imagine, is that so Yule can pull in Tyson and get a majority in case Sandra and Tony turn on him. Maybe that's just a secondary, like a backup plan in case, and he'll continue to target Tyson and Kim for now. But if they decide to turn, then he's got Tyson in his back pocket. But if I'm Yule, I'm definitely going to think, yeah, just pull in Tyson for a fifth vote for the next tribal. We can just get rid of him down the road at some point, maybe. And then also, if we keep Tyson around as a number, as a fifth, then maybe Tyson can also help us with Boston Rob if there's ever a swap or anything like that. So I think there's a lot of reasons for Yule to make this call if he feels good about Tyson. Just some thoughts. Tyson votes for Amber. He says, sorry, Amber, had to concede this battle and hopefully win the war. Amber votes for Nick. She says, nothing personal. I'm just hoping I'm with the majority and right with this. Oof.
I don't know who Amber thought was the majority there, but from the edit, we did not see anyone even lying to her at the end and saying, yeah, we're on with Nick.
Yeah, Amber seems completely left in the dark. Kim votes for Amber and says, sorry, buddy, we're in a sad state of affairs tonight, but I'm assuming you had to write my name down as well. Not the case. Amber was not able to catch on as quickly as Kim, it seems.
And I mean, to give Amber some credit, I do think that she was not feeling confident at this point, but probably just hanging out on a hope and a prayer.
Yeah. Wendell votes for Amber, says, Amber, you're a sweetheart, you're a great mother, but in a season of pre-existing relationships, you are the deadliest combo. Good luck at Edge of Extinction. Sarah votes for Kim, says, it's not going to be you. Yule votes for Amber, says, Amber, you seem like a wonderful person. This is purely about neutralizing the strongest partnership in the game before it's too late. And there you go. Amber is the second one voted off, heading to Extinction, and bequeaths a token to Rob.
What? Rob? Yeah.
Shock. So Rob's gonna find his bequeathment in the next episode. And I have to imagine he's gonna be worrying. This is either Tyson or Amber, I imagine. And
this is not a scenario that was widely talked about preseason. I think a lot of people thought that we saw the reverse of this, or we would see the reverse of this happening with Rob going out. I do think, look, Survivor All Stars, it happened. Probably everyone in this cast watched it or at least heard about it. None of them was going to play Lex and try to keep Amber around to appease him. I don't think anyone is afraid of the reaction. I think that they know it's, you know, they know he's going to be upset, but the benefit of getting rid of her this early in the game is also they're not about to merge next episode. They don't have to deal with it for a little while. He could be gone before they, you know, have to face those repercussions.
Yeah. So that's it. That's what we have from the episodes. But I do have a separate segment of this podcast to cap us out here, finish us off at the end. I talked about it a little bit at the start. I'm calling it the Legacy Tracker. And if you are watching this on the video, then you'll see a visual of this, but we will walk you through it as well. That I've got like a tier list here, and I've got all the winners, and we're going to put them into where we think they sort of fit before the season started, and then kind of keep track of how their legacy shifts throughout the season. As I mentioned, this is the most amount of information we're ever going to get in terms of, you know, how effective they are as players in direct comparison to each other. And I think that whether or not you want this to be the case, a season like this is going to heavily impact the general perspective of how we see these winners. That's generally how this goes. Even though JT's original win on his season was really great, his subsequent performances have, to some degree, I think, limited his respect as a winner. There's debate about it, but there wasn't debate about it beforehand. That's what I mean by this. If we say that like somebody's legacy is going down, if you're a fan of that person, you're going to disagree. But I think what I'm trying to do here is trying to predict what a sort of majority of people might start to feel and start to think about when they're looking at these players. And so that's the goal. Are you ready?
I'm very ready.
So first we need to just put them in where we feel like they fit beforehand. We have the legend tier, The top tier, the middle tier, and the bottom tier.
All right. Do you want to start at the legend then?
Yeah, we'll start at the legends. I feel like we start with Parvati.
Yes.
Sandra.
A couple people who have big heads of themselves.
Rob. And where's Kim?
Yeah, Kim could go up there.
I feel like those are the four in the legend tier.
Yeah, I would say the only other one that you could debate would be potentially Tony. But I think those are good solid picks.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like Rob, Sandra, and Parvati all have had really great performances on at least two seasons. Mm-hmm. And then Kim had such a flawless performance on one season, whereas Tony had a great performance on one season and a not so great performance in another season. I feel like he's not quite up there yet for the top or the legend tier, but I would put Tony in the top tier.
So I guess the question here when you're sorting these are you looking at reputation of like target level, or are you looking at more of gameplay?
Gameplay, when people are thinking about who are the best of all time, how are their wins generally regarded? Like, for instance, I'm a big fan of Ben, where a lot of people are not. I like him. I think he's a cool guy. And I think that he gets a lot of flack that is not deserved because it's not his fault. The fire making twist happened when it did. That said, I think that he is generally regarded as a bottom tier winner. So I think we would put him there.
But beyond just their winning season in terms
Okay, how we cool. look at them as a player overall.
Great. Gotcha. Okay. So some other people in that like top tier, that's where it gets a little tricky. I could see putting Tyson in that tier. I could also make an argument for him being in the middle tier.
Yeah. I was torn top to middle for Tyson.
Yeah, he had a great performances too.
Yeah. He had a great win, but it was his third try and the first two were not super great. I would probably myself put and even his win, I think, is controversial in some areas. I think in terms of characters, he's great. But if we're trying to isolate strategy, I think he's generally more considered a middle tier at the moment.
I'd be like one of the most improved from his first season to his winning season. But this is, I feel like we're already going to get a whole lot of people in those bottom two tiers.
I mean, we'll see. I think it's hard to put other people on the same level as Ben because of how flunky his win was. But we'll see how this goes. I think Yule is a top tier. He does have the detractors from the God Idol, but I think still a lot of people consider him to be like a top tier winner.
Yeah. Strategically, I would say the question there is the fact that he easily could have not won that season. Mm-hmm. But conversely, the fact that he did win up against some good competitors maybe brings him up a little bit.
Yeah. And like this is it's just as much about perspective of their strategic prowess as it is about the actual strategic prowess. We're trying to predict sort of the perception of these players. I think that Natalie
is a very strong strategic.
Is a top tier. I think a lot of people consider Denise to be a top tier.
Yeah. So Denise, I wonder how much, though, could be circumstance for her. How much does her story result in her win?
I think that's a large part of why she's I don't know. I love Denise. I don't know if I would consider her a top tier player, but I do think that because she went to every tribal, I think that because people loved the season and people love her, I think they generally regard her as a top tier winner.
So subjective.
Right. I mean, do you disagree? Like, do you feel there are more people that put her in middle tier?
I could see her in middle tier, but I also know that I'm going to have some arguments for some people who I would want to bump up to.
Try to take your own opinion out of it and think about what you think other people think.
I'm trying to think here. Also of like, what did she do strategically in her season to get her the win? Because so Denise was faced with a lot of circumstances of, you know, having to go to tribal, in which case she did probably have to fight for her win a lot more than other people did. She was also put on a season that had some returning players who were much bigger targets than her from the front, especially when she got that, you know, being the last person, you know, on her tribe to then branch off, or her and Malcolm. I don't, you know, but on the other hand, I can't really think of a whole lot of flaws in things that you point to of right. saying, oh, she shouldn't have done this. So I could, you know, I could take the argument for top tier.
And like how often do you hear people arguing against Denise being like, right. oh, she's more of a middle of the road.
It's, is interesting.
Yeah. I think Wendell as well, top tier.
I agree with that. I would also potentially put Jeremy up
yes.
there. I think that
winning second chance was really big.
Right. I think that his being voted out the first time, it almost feels like he was voted out because he was a returning player. Like, that's how I picture it, of he had like an unfair target on him, kind of, mm-hmm. Or an unsuspected one. So I do think that one's good. Now, the other person that I would say, you know, I could say that Sarah could be top tier.
Yeah, there's some tough ones here.
Yeah. So Sarah and Sophie are the other two people that I'm looking at here. Sophie, I think, was very, she went in, she had a plan. She saw how the tribe was laid out and said, I know what I need to do to get far and to win. And she pulled out the stops when she needed to. I can't think of a whole lot of mistakes she made in her game. She played a game from a middle position. She did not try to lead anything. And so she didn't have to. I wouldn't say that there's nothing I could say like, oh, she should have done this instead. She got the win. She did what she needed to.
I'm with you on that, but I do think there is not insignificant amount of people that think coach should have won, or that like, that this the jury vote didn't go the way that it should have, and that she's maybe not quite as deserving. I disagree with those people, but I do think those people exist, and I think her reputation is a little more middling because of it.
Yeah, I do think. Well, okay, yes, we'll get to this episode in a second.
Right. So we'll put Sophie, I think, middle tier for now.
And Sarah, the question is, how much does her first season weigh her down?
It is tough. I feel like there's Sarah is a hard one to parse through, because I feel like there's so much dislike of her season and of her that it's hard to like sort of sift and find how do people actually think of her as a strategic player. I think a lot of people respect the hell out of the game she played in Game Changers. But I don't know if many people consider her to be a top tier winner. Sarah's maybe one of the hardest ones for me here.
I think that given the players she was up against in her season, mm-hmm. and her complete domination of relationships, I would probably put her as a top tier winner.
Right.
So yeah,
she's going top tier, for now.
I also think that she's one of the biggest people in terms of differences between their games.
Something I think can be really fun if people are interested is that I can put out a survey after this podcast is released, and we can have you rank your own choices here, and we can see how close we came to the general consensus, at least of this audience, which will probably be a little bit different than the general audience. But I guess what we'd ask you to do is have you try to predict what you think the majority of the fan base thinks.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard because, again, we're not going off of character or likability yes. necessarily, or how much people, you know, a lot of people, if you ask the general Survivor public, could they even have named everyone on this season before the season? Maybe not. There's a lot of wins here that sort of get brushed under the rug. But if you're just really analyzing their winning games, how in control, or how much did they do to result in their win? Mm-hmm. So,
All right. Adam, I think a lot of people respect him a lot. A lot of people love Adam and they love his season. However, I do think that there is a not insignificant amount of people that, you know, talk about, oh, he only won because of his story, or that just don't respect his game quite as much. They thought that maybe David should have won. I feel like he's a little more controversial as a winner in terms of his actual strategic gameplay. I would probably put him middle myself.
I do a middle. I think that there were other people in his season who, if they had been in his spot, could have easily won. Like, I don't know if I see, I mean, I know he's got that unanimous victory, but I think that had a lot more to do with who he was up against at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, I think has a lot of respect in the like hardcore fan base, but I do think the casuals really drag her down. Because she did get a lot of flack for beating Aubrey in the vote, and a lot of people didn't think that she should have. I'm tempted to still go middle, but I think she has a case to be made for bottom. I don't think that's deserved in any way, but I do think there are a lot of casual fans that would put her there.
I do think she's similar with Adam, in my opinion, of like, I think there are multiple people who could have won that season, which is like a dumb thing to say because like the winner won. It happened. Yeah, you could have given someone else immunity. I think with her, a second watch of her season makes her feel better. I think the first time around, I was like, who is this person? And the second time around, you see a lot more of her and see what she's doing. I do question the control that she had over the game. I don't know. I'm really in the middle of these two. I could go either way.
I mean, I think the fact that even like her story from the beginning in these episodes in her confessionals was, I have a lot to prove, that people didn't respect my game. I think that alone, that means that she's probably coming from this bottom tier. Again, I disagree personally. Mm-hmm. I would not place her in the bottom tier, but in terms of what I think most of the audience tends to see, I think that she has a lot of opportunity to improve her legacy here.
What's funny, that was also the edit she got in her first season of the I have a lot to prove. I feel like I'm an underdog. I feel like people don't believe in me. So interesting.
All right. Amber. I feel like Amber's another one where, especially at the time on All Stars, there were a lot of people that felt Boston Rob should have won the game. I feel like a lot of the hardcore fans have come around a little bit on Amber, especially as people have come around on Bitter Juries. But still, I think when you think about like respect for gameplay, I personally feel like a lot of people would place Amber there at the bottom tier.
I think that Amber is a bottom tier winner. I just rewatched All Stars and did a lot of a deep dive of that in podcast form. And I think that while you can definitely find areas in that show where she deserves to win, it doesn't mean that she is a top tier winner or a most respected winner in any means. So I think that she unfortunately is in the bottom.
All right. Danny, such a hard one there. Yeah. I feel like the TV audience, again, like the real casuals watched this and probably felt like that Stephanie should have won, probably. But she's garnered a reputation for being a sort of like under the radar player that really was savvy and didn't talk to the cameras about what she was doing. I think she's gained a lot of respect from the more hardcore fan base. And I think that the more hardcore fan base are probably the only people that really remember her. And I think that matters as well. So like when if the casuals are watching this and like, who is this? The only information they have is the sort of opinion of the more hardcore fan base, as opposed to Amber, where a lot of people might remember her season. Feel like right. Danny actually benefits, her legacy benefits from not being very well remembered by the casuals. So I might say Danny's more like a middle tier position here.
Yeah, I would say if you're just going off of like, if you had a casual audience rank, who do you recognize to who do you least recognize? I think Danny would be last on this whole list. Yeah. I could see a bottom tier argument, but I do think that she had she just played such a different game than anyone else, but it was is notable.
Ethan.
I think this is a weird one. I think Ethan deserves to be a middle tier winner. I think the casual audience would bump Ethan up higher because he's just so well loved and well remembered. But if you're looking at that season, I think Ethan's a middle tier winner in terms of legendary status. I mean, in legendary status of strategic gameplay. But in terms of personality, I mean, he might be like the top.
I think if Ethan doesn't come back for All Stars, he's probably considered a top tier winner by the casuals at the very least. But I think because he came back for All Stars, didn't have the best showing, it still was like probably more impressive than he gets credit for, considering they were taking out all the winners. But I do think that I think that if we were doing this for the All-Star season, he would have started in the top tier. And by the end of that season, he would have been dropped down to the middle tier in terms of how people perceive his ability as a player. And so I think that's where he starts from.
Yeah, he does kind of have that thing, though, which is like he's such a veteran in terms of like it's been so long that that almost makes him. It's like a rose-colored glasses, right?
Yeah.
People looking back and no one's remembering his All-Star game. They're looking back at his first game. Anyway.
All right. Then we have Nick.
Yeah. And Nick, I think I'd probably go with in the middle. I think that he did have he's kind of like Sarah in terms of the relationship building that he did in that season. But he was not like her the most dominant in terms of that. I think he's another one where the casual audience liked his game a lot more than maybe some of the other hardcore fans.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people will forget about his first boot scare.
Yeah. I mean, most people, I think, don't even know.
Yeah.
That he was potentially the first person out, if not for a medevac. But yeah, I would agree. Probably about a middle tier just perception of his game. I think that he played pretty well for the game that he played, but I don't know if all of it came across. I feel like there were some other big characters like Christian on the show that that got a lot of credit for things as well. And so I think he was a little bit overshadowed by some of those other big players on his season in terms of how people saw his game. So that's sort of where we have them placed here as at the start. Please feel free to agree or disagree. We're just doing our best to guess at what other people think.
May or may not be arbitrary and reductive. It may be completely subjective, and your own view on them is always going to color your perspective a little bit, trying to be as fair as possible when considering all the different factors.
Yeah. All right. So we've got, let's start to look at these people. So we got Ben here at the bottom. I do not think that this episode helped his case.
No.
I think I saw a lot of people talking about how this only reinforces the fact that he is a bottom tier winner. What happened in this episode.
Yep. Comic relief.
Amber as well, unfortunately being one of the first people out here, did not see it coming in the way that Kim and Tyson were able to get ahead of it. Certainly there's a big case to be made that it was not fair. She was taken out because of her husband. If not for Rob being there, she could have done a lot better, but we didn't get to see that. And so we didn't get a chance for her to pull out of this, this tier. And so I think that she probably, is going to solidly remain there as well.
Unfortunately, I think the only way to have seen if Amber, unlike someone like Michelle, the only way to see if Amber could prove herself would be to put her on a season without Boston Rob.
Right. Michelle, was on the wrong side of a vote. And talks about how things are not working out for her. So I think that she is also still stuck there, still in the game, though, and has room to grow, I think.
Yeah.
Then we have Nick, who I think we just did not see enough of to really get a good sense of him moving up. We saw Ethan get a lot of great character stuff. I think some people are impressed with the game he's playing, but not enough focus, I think, to really move him anywhere legacy wise.
I would say if he could keep this up for a couple more episodes, I could see him moving up.
Yeah.
Potentially.
We saw Danny get in trouble, talk her way out of it. I think that it's sort of like a plus and or minus and then a plus. Not that she would actually move in either direction because it's such a small move either way. But I think that she's still here. No real movement there for Danny. I think we saw Adam do some really good work, pulling the target away from himself. However, there was also a lot of focus on what a rookie move it was to be targeted in the first place, having walked away.
I think it was kind of a bump up, bump down kind of situation.
Yeah. For me, I'm more impressed at his ability to take the target off of his back than I am detracting from him walking away. I think that this is reinforcing to me that Adam is really a good player of this game. And I think that he is probably going to be on his way up over the course of the season, but I don't think there's quite enough there yet to make it happen. Sophie. I think Sophie had a great showing in these two episodes. She was more focused on in the first episode, much less focused there in the second one. A lot of that focus went to Yule. However, I think that it was still some great stuff. I don't think that people are looking at her like a top tier winner yet, but I think that she's like definitely like good placement here up at the top of the middle tier in terms of like really prime position to move up to the top tier if she continues to play this well and have the these great confessionals.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of it's going to depend on how much is she doing behind the scenes and how much I want to know who's going to take charge of the her and Yule alliance. Is it really her using Yule as a shield, or is Yule getting the better of her and is he actually taking control? And that's something that I'm really curious about when you look at the two of them.
Yeah. Then we have Tyson, of course, who was in trouble, but did manage to get himself out of it. I don't think that moves him down. I don't think it moves him up quite yet. If he manages to survive this and pivot away to something else, then maybe that will be seen as impressive. But for now, I think he's probably going to remain where he is.
Yes.
Then we see Sarah not really doing a whole lot. Nah, I don't think she's moving really anywhere right now. We see Jeremy. He takes a big hit here. He really like they gave him that confessional where he's like, hey, don't rock the boat, you might fall out. And then he's the one that fell out of the boat a little bit. At least he was on the wrong side of this vote. Not a great look for Jeremy. They didn't dwell on it too much, and they gave him credit for noticing it right before it happened. So I don't think he's like falling anytime soon, but this is definitely not a great place for him to be. His legacy is definitely I don't think he'll ever fall too far, but you know, not a great couple of episodes for Jeremy.
No, but a lot of the reason why we have Natalie up in this tier is because of her ability to come back from such, you know, issues. So if he can do the same kind of thing that she did, I'd say that even puts him even more of a top tier player.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. We have got Wendell, who we didn't see too much of. I think, you know, he's in a good spot, well positioned. He's got good allies. I think, you know, no real movement, but a solid performance so far. We see Denise. Denise, I feel, was not given the credit for saving herself with Adam, and took a lot of the blame for getting lost and having the target put on her. I feel like maybe like a small hit for her there, that she's not really getting a lot of focus, you know, is a lot of that's going to Adam instead. And so I think that especially if this is right, and that Adam is generally seen as a weaker winner than Denise, and Adam is getting a lot of the credit and Denise is not, then I could see these two starting to flip.
Yep.
Natalie, this is definitely a big one. Does Natalie take a hit from the top tier? I think that it might. I think right now we're all like, we feel bad for Natalie. We're like, oh, it totally makes sense. It's not her fault.
Yeah.
But a couple seasons from now, when she is remembered as being first out, you know, Tina was first out on All Stars, and a lot of people don't blame her for that. But it still makes you think a little bit. Like it's still there, right? It's still a little bit there.
But I think that this shouldn't bump her down yet, at least. Because, and maybe you can base some of this, it's hard because she's on, you know, edge of extinction now. So how much are we going to be able to see of her and see how she reacts? But I will say that being the first person out of a season like this, especially in the circumstance of, like Robin and Amber, she was part of a pretty obvious pair. And especially since they happened to be on that same tribe together, I think that this was more circumstantial than anything that she could have really done. I think her and Jeremy were trying to, like you said, hold back a little bit, which would be conventional wisdom of don't put your neck out there, when probably the thing they could have done to survive this was really throw someone else under the bus. And they weren't doing that, but I don't think that this is like a hit to her yet.
Here's the thing. I feel like in all winter season, she's now the first one out. She's going to be left out of all of this gameplay. I really feel like she's going to be left behind. That all of these other winners are going to get a lot of credit for a lot of things that she can't, because she's not even playing anymore. If she makes it back into the game, I think she's definitely like, even if she just makes it back into the game and then gets voted out again, I feel like that might be enough to get the sort of stink of first out off of her. But I don't know if the casual audience was like fully on board in the first place. I think a lot of the hardcore fans love Natalie as we do. But I feel like I don't know if this looks great for her overall perceived legacy.
I just think that if she was the second person voted out on her tribe, I would agree with you. But the fact that she was the first, I think it's almost a compliment in some ways, saying you're a big enough target that we need to get you out first.
I mean, I can agree. I mean, here's again, if I'm thinking about it from my own perspective, like, do I think that this speaks ill of Natalie's game? Not particularly. If Rob had been voted out, would that have been spoken ill of his game? Not particularly. But I think if Rob had been voted out first, it really could have influenced his perceived position as one of the best winners. Because
you have Tony in the top tier here. Did Tony getting voted out so early in his second season drop him down?
I definitely think so.
Would you have put him as a legend otherwise?
I think that some people would put him as a legend. I've heard arguments to that position. If I was judging Tony, I would think either top or middle tier, because of his showing in Game Changers, I think that it matters a lot. Like, that's the reason why the top tier, the legend tier people are legends, is because they've had multiple showings of really great performances. And so if you aren't able to replicate your success, that is going to be a hindrance to your legacy, I think.
Yeah. I could agree with the Natalie thing. I think it's the other thing about her is if we don't move her down now and she just stays on Edge of Extinction, is she going to move at all?
Exactly. And that's why I feel like you move her down now. But if she has really great content on Extinction or she comes back, then I think that that she can move back up. And maybe even just by the end of the season, the whole thing is such a mess and nobody looks good, then she moves up because of that. I don't know. I'm sort of trying to predict here. I'm sure like Natalie fans are going to be really, really mad at me. I'm a Natalie fan. I'm just trying to guess. I'm just making guesses here. We're just trying to do this.
Okay. All right.
Yule, I think, got some really great content. I think that Yule is Yule, who maybe could be considered not a top tier because of the God Idol, I think solidified his position as a top tier winner.
Instead of moving up, I solidify him because I feel like he could have easily come into this season and had us think, maybe we're being too high on Yule. Maybe he really wasn't that great. Maybe we need to move him down because he's out of the loop. He came in guns a-blazing, knowing how to play and playing well so far. So I think that definitely solidifies his position.
Yeah. And then Tony, I think, who I think also could have been moved down to middle tier if he had another poor performance, is holding on for now.
His lesson so far.
Yeah. Then we have Parvati and Rob, both, who I think really solidified how great they are in the legend tier. Sandra is just being Sandra. I don't think Sandra will ever move because of her two wins. She will always be regarded as a legend tier player.
For her, just similar with Rob and Parvati, almost, if they had been voted out early as well, I would have said, well, yeah, because they're voted out because they're legends and they couldn't have done anything to do that. Instead, the fact that Rob and Parvati played so well this episode just made me be like, is there a tier above legend for what they're doing? Because they're somehow still here. Sandra, I think, yeah, she's being her, and this is good.
Yeah.
And then you got Kim.
The question now, Kim, legend tier status for Kim, but she's only played once, so definitely the shakiest footing of anyone here. She gets a lot of credit for how well she played that season. I'm
she
very curious.
A lot of comments from her season of, was it because of the cast she was with?
Yes.
And I think so far we're seeing not holding up great against a top tier cast.
Might be the case.
I think if you're moving Natalie down, I think you got to move Kim down.
I think I have to agree. I think that for now, again, this is all temporary. It's all temporary. It's just immediate reaction to a single episode. We're just playing around and having fun here. That she definitely has a lot of room to go back into legend status. But I do think that this was a hit to her legacy this episode. I think that a lot of people are thinking, oh boy, maybe she doesn't handle adversity that well. That's an interesting thing to look at. And again, like when you look at the matchups here, how did Tyson handle this situation versus how did Kim handle it? When Tyson, a maybe middle tier winner, is handling it better than Kim, who is a legend tier winner, these are pretty direct analogs. that says a lot about their respective placements. And I think that the more that they react in those ways, the more they will start to even out together in terms of, yeah.
I think there's a reason why, if you looked at Parvati and Rob and Sandra, even Sandra, who won her first season, if they'd all just played once, I don't think we're putting them at legend here for their performances in their first, even Sandra. And so I think a lot of this ranking has to do with your longevity in the series as a whole. You know, there's a reason certain people get brought back 4, 5, 6 times. Do we count last season? You know, I'd say it's still just 5 times. But, you know, there's that, like, maturity of learning the game that Kim just doesn't have at this point.
I agree. So, yeah, that's the legacy tracker. It's probably going to be very controversial. You know, what are you going to do? I think that what could be fun for this, if we continue to have fun with this podcast and people like the legacy tracker, I think it would be fun to actually release a survey every week, sort of like we do in Big Brother, to see how people are actually responding. Do people think that Kim is going to be dropped down a tier? Do people think Natalie might be dropped down a tier? Do people think that Yul might be up a tier? I want to get a pulse on at least the, you know, some of the RHAP audience's response, and that might give us a better idea of what we're looking at. And then also, people won't be able to blame me specifically quite as much, because I'll just talk about what the audience thinks.
I'm still going to get blamed.
But that's what we have.
Yeah, it's good. I'm really curious, because a lot of, you know, there's definitely people who are hardcore Survivor fans, but maybe know, you know, 100% about half of these people's games, and then only, you know, a little bit. Maybe some of the people, they saw their season once or whatever. And I think that's going to factor into it. Just how well do you know someone, and how much have you been paying attention? How much do you like them? These things all factor in.
Yeah. So there you go. That was the Survivor update podcast. This was a long one because it was a double episode, and we are directly going to be proportional to how long the episodes are, because I would go through the episodes in detail. I promise in the future it will not be quite this long, but I do hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed hearing my thoughts, hearing Mary's thoughts. I will try to have a guest on each week from, you know, the RHAP community. Might be able to get some Big Brother players on to hear their perspective. You know, it's anything can happen. The world is our oyster. We will bequeath you as many podcasts as you want.
Oh my gosh, man. This has become part of the world we live in,
truly. I mean, Survivor and bequeath forever linked.
I will bequeath you another episode of Survivor. CBS will bequeath us.
Oh boy. I hope you guys enjoyed. Please let me know if you did, and if you want more of these, find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taren, and let me know. And you can watch this on YouTube, I hope, if you want to watch. We are here in video, and we had the tier lists up as we went for that, but you can also listen. It's fine. It's, you know, we're not gonna judge you.
And you don't get to see my Rob and Rob combo.
That's true.
And Rob.
Yes, please let me know if you like this and if you want more. Thanks for hanging out. Mary, where can people find you if they want to hear your Boston Rob takes?
Right. Yeah, you can check out the Survivor All-Stars podcast that myself and Matt Ligori did over on Kowski Cast. Cow with a K. We also do some Riverdale stuff there if you're into Riverdale. And if you're not into Riverdale, but you're into Josh Wiggler, we did a Josh Wiggler Riverdale episode, which requires absolutely zero Riverdale knowledge because he didn't have any either. So,
was it a Josh Wiggler Riverdale episode, or was it a Riverdale Josh Wiggler episode?
I think Josh Wiggler gets top billing over Riverdale any day.
But basically what I'm saying is, was it a Josh Wiggler edition of a Riverdale podcast, or is it a Riverdale edition of a Josh Wiggler podcast?
Yeah, I'd say Riverdale edition of a Josh Wiggler podcast. It's more Josh than Riverdale, for sure.
Riverdale themed Josh content.
Yeah, Yes, there was no structure at all, but there was a lot of Josh. So I think that that's where we're at with that. So I would check that out if you're just interested in him or want to have some laughs, because that is a laugh filled podcast. But yeah, so you can also find that on KowskiCast, or you can find me on at Frail Mary, and you can usually find all my podcasts there. But hopefully people had fun with this. Taryn had a great idea. Taryn/Rob of doing this little Survivor update.
I know there's plenty of Survivor content out there, but hopefully you like this one. And like I said, the goal will be that it's like a little bit shorter in the future. But you know, for those that like the Big Brother stuff and you want to hear my thoughts and you want to hear the more sort of in detail, in-depth analysis of the episodes and me trying to wildly speculate about what all of that means, then, maybe you like this. And if you also like ranking things and rating them, then you might also enjoy this as well. If you like being mad about ranking things and rating them, you might really like this one. So, again, please let me know, because I have no idea how this is going to land. And I want to hear your thoughts, especially if they're good thoughts. If they're bad thoughts, then just don't say anything and I'll hear the silence and I'll know.
Yeah. And if you like me being a sidekick to Taryn, then come back for Big Brother.
Big Brother Canada starting soon, March 4th. It'll be fun. All right. Thank you guys once more. And, you know, go to RHAP for the things. And we'll see you next
How
time.
How you found this without RHAP, I'm not sure. But welcome.
No, bye. Not welcome. Bye. This is the end of the podcast. Sorry. It's the end.
I'm sorry. Did I mention I had coffee today?
It's the end. Bye.